Blog Talk Radio. You're tuned in to In5D Radio, the next dimension of radio, where we bring you the hottest in-depth spiritual, metaphysical, esoteric conversations and news with your hosts Greg Prescott and Heidi Cole. Get ready for spirit, body, and mind to expand in 3, 2, 1.
Okay. Welcome everyone to In5D Radio, coming to you from Sarasota, Florida, every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, and 12 a.m. midnight in the UK. I'm your host, Greg Prescott from In5D.com. And for the next 2 hours, we're going to be raising the vibration of the planet, galaxy, and universe. Tonight's show is just going to blow your collective minds, as our special guest will be Santos Bonacci. But first, I'd like to introduce my co-host, coming to you from New York City, singer, songwriter, stunt person, and author of The Subway Diaries, Heidi Cole. Hello, Heidi.
Hi, Greg.
Hi.
How are you?
What's going on? I'm doing great. Dude, another beautiful day here in Florida. 80s, low 80s. I don't know what that's Celsius. I don't know, 50 maybe?
Yeah, it was amazing. It's our first spring day here in New York, too. It was phenomenal.
Excellent. Yeah, from what I understand, there's a lot of beautiful weather going on up there. So let's jump right into it. What do you got in the news for us, Heidi?
As most people know, and this is all relative, I'll preface it by saying, given the pace of the planet right now, it was kind of a slow week, but again, very relative. Few stories did stick out. One is the Louisiana sinkhole, which doesn't seem to be subsiding, but on the contrary, is both growing in size and now covers more than 13 acres of land, and is continuing to threaten the surrounding townships as the water is now pushed right up to the man-made barriers put in place to contain it. And new thick oil slicks can be seen from the latest aerial footage of the sinkhole. The 13-acre sinkhole and consequences of its emergence and continued growth, such as methane trapped under the Bayou Corn area, have already forced the evacuation of 350 residents for more than 7 months. A sinkhole found in swamps between Bayou Corn and Grand Bayou on August 3rd is believed to have been caused by a failed Texas brine cavern mined into the Napoleon Dome. In addition to the ever-expanding size, depth, and makeup of the sinkhole, it's the now almost constant seismic activity accompanying these massive changes is quite a threat. Seismic monitors detected an increased Friday in the tremors. Scientists have now said indicate fluid and gas movement below the sinkhole. Here's a report from News 4 in Louisiana.
It's a living, breathing thing, the Assumption Parish sinkhole. More than 200 days after it mysteriously began swallowing up the swamp, hundreds of residents are still under a mandatory evacuation order. As Katie Moore reports, the cavern that caused it is still collapsing, leaving Bayou Corn residents wondering if there will ever be an end in sight.
Bayou Corn has always been a peaceful place.
We could drop the boat right there and just take off to go fishing. It was just like a paradise.
But now it feels downright empty. Jamie Weber is gone. A sign on her old home says it's thanks to Texas brine. She had no idea that she was putting her mobile home on land on top of an underground salt dome, one full of caverns used to make brine or salt water, others used to store hazardous, potentially explosive gases. Geophysicists now say the western side of one of the brine caverns is collapsing, filling in from deep in the earth, causing the sinkhole at the surface to expand and contract.
On October 25th, we moved out of our home.
She and some of the 350 evacuated Bayou Corn residents packed a joint legislative hearing in Baton Rouge in recent days looking for answers. Many of the ones they keep getting are conflicting and confusing, especially from the state and the company that once mined the collapsing salt cavern, Texas Brine.
Senator, the cause of the sinkhole is the subject of pending litigation. At this point, I don't think it's proper to have any discussion about what the cause is and whether we accept what anyone has said regarding the cause of the sinkhole.
The cavern collapse led to the sinkhole and created a path for the natural gas and the crude oil to come to the surface.
That's Louisiana Department of Natural Resources Secretary Stephen Schutz. He slipped out a back door after the hearing without giving us the chance to ask him any questions.
The sinkhole is constantly changing. It changes every time we go out there.
Gary Hecox is an engineer consulting with DNR about what to do about the sinkhole. It's uncharted territory.
The cavern was 3,400 feet deep, which is deeper than any known cavern failure impacting the surface in the international record.
Meaning nowhere in the world has a brine cavern this large collapsed, and it's not finished yet.
We still have 450 feet to fill. How long is it going to take to fill this up? At 1 foot per day, we're looking at an ongoing event that's still going to run over a year.
Every time it shifts, recently installed seismic monitors pick up tremors like little earthquakes. When it does, big bubbles of natural gas, vegetation, and crude oil are released to the surface. They call it a burp.
It appears that the sand and gravel that's in the bottom of the sinkhole breaks up a large gas bubble into many small bubbles, just like an aquarium. And that is a good thing, because if you get a single bubble up and have an ignition source, you can have a flashover.
An explosion. Instead, those little bubbles are coming out all around the actual sinkhole site, with 20 new sites spotted in the last month. 9 months after the bubble sites first surfaced, Texas Brine started installing vent wells to alleviate the pressure underground. You can see some of them burning in 15 places around Bayou Corn.
We continue to install relief wells as fast as we can, and we'll keep doing so as long as they continue to be effective.
The problems in Bayou
There is talk that the sinkhole is going to continue to expand, and that its purpose, which is probably on the conspiracy side of things, is to expand the Mississippi River and cut the United States in half. So we'll keep an eye on that timeline. This past week also, there were two major earthquakes globally, one 6.2 magnitude in Russia, quite near to the North Korean border, prompting conversations about HARP-instigated earth manipulation used as weaponized weather. And the second, a 7.1 magnitude striking eastern Indonesia just this past Saturday. And finally, our beloved Mickey D seems to be upping its job description in order to qualify to work for the Golden Arches. Now 2 years of experience plus a bachelor's degree is required by one Massachusetts McDonald's restaurant. They're, quote, get a weekly paycheck with a side order of food, folks, and fun. An article in the Washington Examiner stated this week, youth advocates said the ad is proof of how bad the employment situation is for kids. The quote is, sadly, we've taxed and spent our way to an economy in which there's intense competition for just about any job. Combine that with government meddling in the student loan market that has artificially inflated the cost of higher education, and young people are getting screwed over even worse than ever in this country overall, said Evan Feinberg, president of the Washington-based youth advocacy group, Generation Opportunity. The full Mickey D's article can be viewed in the news section at in5d.com. And, Greg, what do you have for news this week?
Have you ever wondered what it would be like if the mainstream media actually reported positive news? One of the biggest stories this week was actually reported by two mainstream media sources, Fox News and the New York Post. Scientists have found a cure that will treat every kind of cancer. However, cancer researcher Tyler Jacks of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge says that although the study is promising, more research is needed to see whether the results hold true in humans. Now, we can pretty much see where this one's heading, which is the likely suppression of yet another cure for cancer. According to Dr. Leonard Caldwell, there are over 300 cures for cancer, and Caldwell stated that all cancers can be cured within 12 weeks. And once again, I just want to mention that there's no such thing as bad news. All news leads to a greater awakening of the planet. So
that's pretty wild.
Yeah. So right now we're still waiting on Santos to call in, and I can see that he is on Skype. So I'll send him a quick message.
What's his time
and,
there in Australia? What's his time? Like.
Oh gosh, it's early. Yeah, I really don't know.
Yeah,
I'm gonna send him a message.
Okay.
And give. So hold up the fort, and I'll be right back.
Okay, cool. So today I'll give you some local news from New York City. For all of those fascinated by the Big Apple. Today I was biking around, and since 08, a lot of construction has stopped. It just halted when the crash happened. And big holes in the ground were left. And this was amusing. One was started back up again today, which is not the amusing part. But I went by and spoke with the foreman, because just the thought of another 62-story building in our neighborhood is nauseating to me. And I don't understand it yet, given that some people can't even afford to eat. But the amusing part was that because it was stalled for so many years, water would accumulate in the bottom of this pit, huge pit, huge. It's an entire city block. And after many complaints and a lot of people being afraid of West Nile, they made it into a goldfish pond. And so today they were fishing out huge goldfish from this construction site, and the workmen were taking them home, and it was just so bizarre. And I'll probably be asking Santos about this, but and as I continued up the Hudson on my bike, everyone was out enjoying the new cherry blossoms, and it was the first almost 70-degree day here in New York. So what happens in New York, it doesn't matter what day of the week it is, everyone's outside on the first spring day. You can't not find a patch of green grass anywhere. So I was biking up the Hudson, and everyone was relaxing and having cookouts already, and playing soccer, biking, running. And all of a sudden, I saw this cop car and pull up by this row of fishermen who were just, you know, relaxing and fishing. And he proceeded to ticket every single fisherman who didn't have a permit to be there catching disgusting, gross catfish from the Hudson River. And it just, I actually emailed Greg with a photo. I'll put it on my Facebook page. But it floors me that it's on par with not being able to collect rainwater or grow your own vegetables on your own property in your backyard. And I thought about my little garden in my window box. If they could, they'd probably come and confiscate that, because I'm growing lettuce and all sorts of things. But it just floors me that they have to get their hand into everything and charge for it and penalize you. And, you know, this cop was doing his job, but his job is to troll for revenue. So that's what he was doing. And it's just all topsy-turvy backwards in my mind. Once you see this stuff, you sort of can't help but see the absurdity of it everywhere. Is he there? Do we have Santos yet?
No, I don't see him yet on the switchboard. I was listening to an interview yesterday. Matter of fact, it was Dr. Sam Muggsy who was interviewing James Gilliland, and they were talking about this diversion or conversion of timelines that are going on. And I've talked to a bunch of people about this, and it's really cool, where people feel like they're almost living in two different timelines, where things are happening here and maybe not happening there. And I think one of the examples that was given was, you could put your keys down on the table and then look back and it's not there and the keys aren't there anymore. And you know you put your keys there, but they're not there anymore. And that was explained to be as a convergence of these timelines, where or a divergence perhaps of these timelines. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I was wondering, you know, maybe if some while we're waiting for Santos to call, if anybody has any kind of experiences like that where you've kind of gone between timelines, definitely call in and share your experiences with us. Our call-in number is 646-716-8890. Feel free to call in and tell us whatever your experiences are, whether it is experiencing dual timelines or how your awakening is going. Feel free to give us a call. Once again, that's 646-716-8890.
Or maybe even missed time. That's happened to me. Like hours go by and I swear it's only been 2 minutes or 10 minutes. It's the trippiest experience. I don't know if you've ever had that, Greg, where you're doing something you normally do and you swear you've only had it been doing it for 10 minutes and 4 hours have passed.
It's
bizarre. It's a bizarre experience. And it's not like you've fallen asleep and wake up 4 hours later. It's not that you're in life. Like sometimes it happens when I'm busking, when I'm performing, and that's not an easy job. So I would think I'd know if 4 hours had gone by.
A lot of people have been talking about the whole time is speeding up phenomena too, which kind of ties in with this, where it just feels like time is just going quicker. You're getting more done in less time, which is how Ian Lundgold explained it. Danny and Brinkley believes that time isn't speeding up, but our consciousness is speeding up. But yet, you know, whether you see it one way or the other, people are just feeling like, yeah, time is speeding up right now. You know, so if anybody has any experiences with that, give us a call.
I also think sometimes what's happening, for instance, my experience today, when you wake up, you are living in multiple timelines. If you cannot be awake and still be stuck strictly in 3D, I don't think it's possible because you're experiencing two different worlds at least. So maybe perhaps the speeding up phenomenon is also because time doesn't exist as we all know. It's a fabrication of human beings, and so we're inching closer to that reality of time not existing, so that we actually, everything is obviously happening at the same time, although we break it up and enforce this belief that things are happening incrementally and there's a past and a present and a future. But once you start to realize that that 3D is one construct and it's not all that, it's not everything, that you begin to see everything at once. Like today, I see the 3D and the cop and the fisherman, and yet I'm outside of it looking in because I know there are other options that I'm living. And so I think that's part of perhaps the doing more in less time, because you're actually you're bouncing back and forth continuously, even if you don't know it.
Greg? Yeah, I was, but my microphone was on mute, so I apologize for that. Yeah, well, you know, the thing I notice, and, you know, I've been talking to a lot of people about this as well, is that, you know, especially when we go into the dream state, it seems like time is non-existence. I don't know if anyone's ever noticed that. You know, when you're dreaming, you're never looking at the clock. You're never cognizant of what day of the week it is. You know, you don't think it's Monday or Wednesday or 7 a.m. or p.m. You just go into that area where, you know, you go into those ethereal realms where, you know, it almost seems like your dreams are more real than actual real life. So I thought that was pretty fascinating.
I think we spoke about that last week, week before the first show. Yeah, that dreams are. I think we added that to our ascension list as before we got even to symptom number two. The dreams being more tangible, more viable, more real than this someone else's made up 3D life, right? The waking life.
Yeah, that one kind of fell under the first one, the change of sleep patterns, I guess.
Right. Yeah, it was a spin-off of that. And it is because, you know, this construct that someone else has built, whoever they are, is is their idea of reality. It's only an idea of reality. It has very little little else going for it. I mean, it's just one option. So once you realize that, it becomes a little. I don't know if boring is on the list of ascension symptoms, but being bored is not one of my strong suits, but just in the 3D alone, not being able to tap into 5 or 4 or beyond, once you're awake, I find it's a little dull just being in 3D 24/7. It's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you found.
Pardon me?
I don't know if you found that or not, but it's not captivating enough anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're still waiting for Santos to give us a call in. And Santos, our call-in number is, like everybody else, 646-716-8890. And hopefully he gets the message here soon. And I guess, you know what, in the meanwhile, we're going to go pick up on that list of what we were doing with the 51 spiritual awakening symptoms. And what we did was we started out, you know, it's funny, we started this list on our first show, and we made it through maybe 3.
I know.
Yeah, there's just so much to talk about. And we kind of cut into a little of them before Jordan came on last week. And now here we are. I think we've only made it to number 5. So a quick recap. Number 1 is a change in the sleep patterns. Number 2 is activity at the crown of the head. Number 3 is sudden waves of emotion. Number 4 is old stuff seems to be coming up. And number 5 is changes in weight. So moving on to number 6, changes in eating habits, strange cravings, and odd food choices. So I know that you've been going through some of this stuff, especially eating habits and having a steak for the first time in like forever. Or meat.
Made me sick for 3 days. I'm just barely on the other side of that, which was weird for me because normally I'm quite a carnivore. But I, my body didn't handle it well at all. I mean, the taste of it was awesome, but for 3 days, you heard me do nothing but complain and moan, and I didn't even know if I'd be functioning. It felt like it was really bad. I just have to heed it, I guess. And this was a spin-off on that, but I mentioned to you today that as these changes are going on, as a performer, as a busker, and a busker is a little different than just going on stage and performing in that you're surrounded by 2,000 or 3,000 people a day, and it's very up close, and I guess the word is intimate because you're quite there when you're busking. Santos busks as well, but in a little different way. And it's a very vibration-oriented art form when you're down there. And I've noticed my ability to connect with people changes drastically depending on what I've consumed. Drastically. And the offshoot of that is that it shows in my guitar case.
Mm-hmm.
If I've been on a really clean, I guess I'll term it a high vibration diet, and not because I'm forcing myself, but just because that's what suits me. I can, there's this direct channel to the audience, and they get it. You know, I get them, they get me, and it's this conversation of energy, and it's so intense and it's effortless. And once it gets weighted down with a meat or something else, that it totally stops it. It cuts the energy in half. And it's so evident when you're out there in that kind of environment. I expect if you work with children or animals, the experience might be the same. We're having Elle Sebastian on in a couple of weeks, and I'd probably ask her about that as well because she works with – she's an animal communicator, and I'd be interested to see if – to know whether she had similar experiences with her – what she consumes and how she's able to hear to, because it's the same thing when you're busking, to hear – those you're communicating with, you know, and then communicate back efficiently. So, like my dietary stories.
Yeah, that'll be a great question for when we do have Elle's on in 2 weeks, or is it next week?
2 weeks, I think.
Two weeks. Correct.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, moving on. Right, 2 weeks from now. And moving on, number six, we have changes in eating habits, strange cravings, or odd food choices.
We just did that one.
No, that was changes in weight. Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Number seven, food intolerances, allergies you've never had before. I don't fall under that. I pretty much everything I eat is really good. I try to keep away from the processed food and just eat GMOs and organics, lots of distilled water, as you do, Heidi.
Distilled has changed my life drastically.
Thank you, Andrew Norton Weber.
Yeah, from Andrew. And as far as allergies, you know, it's just, I think the cleaner you get, the more sensitive you are to crap. So that's what I found, if that qualifies as an allergy. I mean, you don't tolerate stuff anymore. You just don't, your body doesn't put up with it once it starts to vibrate higher and higher. That's what I found, and maybe that goes under allergies.
I agree. Number eight is amplification of the senses, which would be increased sensitivity. I don't know if anyone's experiencing that. I know I certainly am. You know, your all five senses are heightened, and you start to actually become more telepathic or involved with ESP, kind of reading people's minds or finishing other people's sentences. So have you experienced any of that?
Oh, wow, yes. I mean, my whole life has switched, absolutely. Could write a novel on all the things that have happened, and yes, yeah, so every day more and more highly tuned, and actually it ties back into to diet, because every now and again I need to slow down, because you start to see, hear, taste, smell everything, and sometimes it gets a little bit. At the beginning, especially, I had to back up and have a fake or something, just to, because I couldn't take the pace, you know, it gets very fast. And now it's easier. Now that I'm having this conversation, I realize it doesn't feel as overwhelming, but at the beginning, I had to take breaks, and the only way I could slow myself down, for some people, I guess it's like a vodka martini. For me, it was heavy food.
Oh, Lord.
So, you know, I mean, I had to have something to slow my vibration down so I could catch my breath. Does that make sense? I mean, and then I'd go back and take a little increment, you know, go a little bit further into raising vibration. But because you start to see everything, and it's a lot.
Well, you know, as I've told people, you know, I am no angel. You know, don't put me on a pedestal. I'm not an angel. I do smoke cigarettes, and I was talking to a friend, and I'll let her explain it if she wants to. I'm not going to say who it is, but she was at this metaphysical conference in California, and they all went to take a break, and all but one speaker actually went out and smoked, and they all smoked the same brand, which is the same brand I smoked, which is the natural cigarette, American Spirit Yellow Pack. And I do smoke. I have my vices. I'm not perfect, but, it is what it is. You know, we all have things that we need to do and overcome, and perhaps maybe that's one of my challenges that I wanted to overcome was addiction. So it is what it is. Please don't put me on a pedestal.
I don't even look at these things also as okay. I look at them a little differently too. I think society has condemned so many things, you know, I mean, that there's so much guilt attached to things, and I don't see it that way. I see it, everyone is on their process, and just like my reasoning for, you know, having a steak or something to slow my vibration down when I needed it, I could look at that as an addiction, or I could look at it as that's the process I'm in, or else I sort of feel like I'm self-destructing. It's just too much, you know? So, I think there are a couple ways to look at the things people do, and if you're aware and awake, and you're willing to be flexible with yourself, you'll make changes when you need to make changes, when you want to make changes. There's not someone in the sky saying, you know, this is good, this is bad, this is what you need to do. It may be fine for you too. I mean, the benefits may outweigh anything that's doing badly to you at the moment because of what you're doing in life. Who knows? just like me with my meat. It has its place when it has its place. So I don't look at it as a, I don't look at it as like shaking fingers at people so much.
Now, here's something I found interesting under amplification of the senses. They talk about sight, blurry vision, shimmering objects, seeing glittery particles, auras around people, plants, animals, and objects. Some report seeing formerly opaque objects as transparent. So, you know, if anybody is, like I said, listening right now, feel free to give us a call and tell us what you're experiencing. And our number is 646-716-8890 while we're waiting for Santos. And it's possible that Santos might believe that we're on the 8 o'clock time schedule instead of the 7. I'm not sure. I've sent him a message on Skype, so we're waiting on that.
And I sent him a message on Facebook. So.
Okay.
I would love to hear other people's ascension experiences. It's always so fascinating. Because they're usually so similar, you know. You think you're the only one. The blurry vision thing, for sure. And the distilled water really helped. It was almost like a medicine for that for me. The distilled water cleared it up. I used to have that a lot, a whole lot, really frustratingly. So, how about you?
Well, you know, the distilled water, as Andrew Norton Weber says, is the fountain of youth. It's, you know, if you look at a picture of me now compared to, you know, even 5 years ago, I look 10 years younger, and I'm not sure whether it's the distilled water or juicing or elimination of GMOs, eating mostly organic, a combination of everything. I don't know, but it's all working. And I can tell you, I see other people, it's happening for them too. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful stuff. We'll probably have to have him on at some point, because he's a endless pit of information on that subject. He's the guru, and he's fascinating to listen to, and he's so passionate about it. So it's a joy to hear him every time.
Okay. Number 9 is skin eruptions, rashes, bumps, acne, hives, and shingles. I've had acne. Here I am. I turned 53 this year, and I've had pimples, and not full-blown zits. I don't want to gross anyone out, but I haven't had that. But just, you know, pimples that are coming up here and there, and I'm like, where the hell is this coming from? Yeah.
Not me, except when I was started distilled water, that happened. But I think that was a detox process for distilled water. That happened a lot. So I haven't had that.
You know, it's interesting because the article goes on to say that it might be a sign of releasing toxins from your body. So as we're purifying our bodies, they have to come out somehow in some way, either through sweat or perhaps pimples or whatever. But that might be one of the ways that it's being rid from our bodies. Number 10 is episodes of intense energy, which make you want to leap out of bed and into action. It goes on to say, followed by periods of lethargy and fatigue. The fatigue usually follows great shifts. This is a time of integration, so give into it. Intense energy. Have you experienced any intense energy?
Oh my God, that's me 24/7. Yes, and then but that's been me my whole life. I'm like a puppy, you know, like crank, 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 go, 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 and then collapse. but it's more conscious now, so. And I also feel that these periods of energy at this point are, how do I say that? It's like I'm getting help. It's not just me. It's not all me. So that's how they're different. It's bigger than me. When I was a kid, it was just me being a spaz and running around the backyard for hours. Now, even this like 3-hour bike ride up to whatever and back again today, it's not just me. It's the earth, it's Gaia, it's everything, and it makes it relatively, it makes it quite powerful, and then the crashing thing, I think that loops right around back to the sleep dream thing, because then I enjoy the the dream world as much as I do the adventures on planet Earth. And it's as active and interesting and entertaining. But how about you with energy?
Well, it's almost the exact opposite. I've been tired, and I've been taking this is what I tell people to do. You know, listen to your body. I can't emphasize that enough. You know, when my body tells me it's time to sleep, I sleep. So I might take a nap at, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and sleep until 8, but I listen to my body, and whenever when I wake up, I feel completely refreshed. Yeah, I do have a ton of energy at that point, but in all areas of life, and this is a great example too. You know, for example, you know, if you have acid reflux or heartburn, your body is telling you that you really need to boost up your alkalines. You're taking in too much acidic food. So, and what Big Pharma wants you to do is, you know, say, screw your body. Here, take these Rolaids or this Pepcid AC, and you'll be better. But ultimately, your body knows best. And when it's telling you, hey, you know, okay, so I've got this heartburn, listen to your body. Eat some celery. Eat some fruits or vegetables, preferably vegetables. I find that a stick of celery and if you have heartburn, it goes away. You're done with your heartburn, and you don't have to turn to Big Pharma. So, but yeah, I'm kind of going off subject here. Yeah, I do have the burst of energy, but it is after taking a nap when I listen to my body. So, number 11, change in prayer or meditation. So it goes on to say, not feeling the same sensations as before, not having the same experience of being in contact with spirit, difficulty in focusing. Now, this is one thing that I get a lot of. You know, a lot of people will say, you know, I have a really hard time trying to get into that deep meditative state. And on N5D, if you go to the meditation link, there's a link called Amazing Open Eye Meditation, where what you do is, and you can take any two objects. I use two empty water bottles. You can use anything. But what you do is you sit about 6 feet away from them and place them about 6 feet apart from you, and 6 feet apart from one another, almost making like a triangle. And what you try to do is you focus on both bottles. And while you're doing that, you really can't think of anything else but nothing. And it's the greatest way. You could clear your mind in the middle of the city or a crowded beach. If all you're doing is looking at those two bottles and trying to maintain focus on those two bottles, you'll have no difficulty getting into that deep meditative state.
So was that symptom, did it say, you might just repeat it, but did it say more trouble meditating than normal or just trouble?
Changes in prayer or meditations.
So it didn't say trouble, it just said changes. So it could be positive, it could be easier.
It could be. But one of the things they went on to say was difficulty in focusing. It could be, yeah, it definitely could be either. You know, some people, maybe they're picking it up so much quicker and getting into that deep meditative state, and good for them.
And what about, this is going to be a tangent from this, whatever number we're on, 9, 10, 11. This is something I found. As you combine meditation with raising your vibration through cleansing and nutrition and being aware and conversations like this, which are invaluable, I found that the meditative state and the waking state are not that different anymore. So that even walking around Manhattan, I can be in a meditative state. I can be in the same place as I am with my legs crossed and, you know, arms, fingers and circles on my knees. I mean, it's not that vast anymore, the feelings between the two. So,
that's,
I don't know,
beautiful.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Number 12 is, well, this kind of relates to the other one, but it says power surges. All of a sudden, you feel you are heated from head to toe. It's a momentary sensation, but uncomfortable. In contrast, some people have felt inexplicably cold. I haven't really, the power surges like that, the hot and cold, I haven't really experienced that. So I'd have to bypass that one on my own. Yeah. Well, not much you can do about that one. And the advice that they give is, if you are uncomfortable, ask your higher power that, if it be for your best interest and highest good, to turn down or up the temperature a little bit. And once again, I'd like that's a really good point, too, is, you know, we all have our spirit guides and guardian angels that are there waiting for us to ask them to do anything for us. I mean, they're following you around as if you are the God that you are. And they're waiting for you to ask them to do anything. They're there for you 24/7, and yet most of the time we're just, you know, oh, I can handle this, or this is something I can do on my own. But yeah, definitely turn to your spirit guides and guardian angels and ask them for help at any time.
You know, I have a story about that. When I was going through some changes per instructions from guides, who basically they're the only entities I ever listened to, ever. and they had instructed me on some dietary changes, and I balked, and I finally did. And all of them were with the phrase, you know, like, do this, or we would encourage you to do this so you can hear us more clearly. This is always what they say, so you can hear us more clearly. And, of course, that's one of my main missions in life, to hear more clearly. And feel and see. And I did all these things, and I was feeling okay. And then I started feeling really horrible, and I got kind of pissed off because I'm like, you know, I did all this stuff, and it wasn't easy, and now I feel horrible, and, you know, what's the deal? Because I thought I would feel more energetic and not bad. And it was around, I think it was May last year, was right? Yeah, it was May. And I remember waking up at 4 a.m. in the morning and thinking, you know, I don't want to wake up tomorrow morning and feel like crap again. This isn't fair. And so I sat up and I meditated, and I channel. And so I sort of brought that energy in, and I asked directly, as you said, Greg, I really could use some help. And they always ask back. They're like, would you like our help? I'm like, yes, I just said I would like your help. Yes. But they always ask. You know, they don't just, like, jump in. They always ask. Even if you've asked, they ask. And I was like, yes, please. And then at that moment, I felt this intense pressure inside my skull, like behind my eyes, but it's farther in, like in very middle of my skull. This pressure, not pain, just a pressure, like a sponge was expanding. And I just observed this. My eyes were closed, and it grew, and it go out and out and out and out. And I just observed it as this was happening, and it grew out and further and further. And then finally, it just contracted, and I fell back, and I went to sleep. And I hadn't been able to even go to the gym or anything for a few days. I was feeling so horrible. This is why I was so bad. So I woke up the next morning. I was fine. And I ran for 2 hours. I biked for 3. I was fine from then on out. And so it was just really pretty simple. You know, you ask and you tap in and you listen, and it's given back. And that's happened many times since. That was the first most tangible, I should say, in my life that's happened. And it was a pretty wild ride, but it definitely the asking works.
Yeah, and there you have it, folks. Ask and you shall receive, and there's a great testimony right there. Number 14 is looking younger. And like I said, there's a lot of people that I've talked to, especially now that we've all started this distilled water therapy. A lot of people are saying the same thing. They're looking younger. And even if you're not, I think that what this really ties into is, once you eliminate the fear, I believe fear is like probably one of the greatest causes of aging that there is. And once you eliminate that fear, what is there to worry about? Your body's not going to go through that additional stress. So what it goes on to say is, as you clear emotional issues and release limiting beliefs and heavy baggage from the past, you are actually lighter. Your frequency is higher. You love yourself and life more. You begin to resemble the perfect you that you really are. So what's your thoughts on looking younger, Heidi?
I found a lot of things have reversed, especially since the distilled water. And I'll second that
the fear and stress being the root of aging. I think Abraham Hicks says it so well when she says, she describes it as resistance. And resistance is what you let go of when you, as she says, croak or pass away or die. And without resistance of any kind, theoretically, you could live indefinitely. So it's resistance, and you said fear, which is a form of resistance. And we spoke of resistance earlier, too, when you were speaking of your cigarettes, right? It's probably less the cigarettes, but the emotion that goes on with you smoking the cigarettes, the guilt or the beratement, the self, you know, flagellation, all that. Do you know what I mean? It's the mental stuff that goes on that's more detrimental. It's the resistance or the fear that's detrimental sometimes more than the action.
I would think just watching TV would make you age with all the fear propaganda that they put on there.
Yeah, I don't own one, so yes, I would think. But I think, it's all one big package, like the distilled water, the dietary changes, then you raise vibrationally, and then you're brighter, you're lighter, and people just get attracted to, they don't know what they're attracted to, but they're attracted to this purity of being, which is in them as well, but they've not said hello to it for so long, right? So it's like a child running over to a dog, because that dog is pure energy. They're not afraid. They're not guilty. They're not, unless they've been messed with by humans. And it's that same attraction. So the purer you get, the more positive feedback you get from people, just because they want to be around that kind of energy. It reminds them of who they know you really are. If that makes sense.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. The advice that they give. Oh no, excuse me. Let's move on to the next one. The next one is vivid dreams, and this is really, I'll tell you. You know, for myself, I've had so many dreams recently, and I explained one of them, and it actually turned out to be an article where I went to the other side and experienced what it was like to have my memory erased before I incarnated here. So that was just one of them, and I've been having dreams about my daughter, and my daughter actually meeting her spirit guide and me as well on the other side, and so many intense dreams. And I also find that once you have eliminated all the fear, the only thing left in your mind to work out is either what hasn't came yet, so you'll have these prophetic dreams, or just something mundane that happened throughout the day. Say you walked your dog during the day, and you might have a dream about walking your dog at night. But once you eliminate that fear, and it really ties into, you know, the looking younger one, you know, it really does give you these amazing dreams. So have you had any vivid dream experiences lately?
Oh, my God. Yeah, mine are crazy. Mine are like amusement parks. And I mean, I had this dream. I had a dream about a frog, which I'm looking forward to part two of, because it was one of those dreams where you don't know if you're awake or asleep, but it doesn't really matter either way. So I was asleep. I don't know, but I swore I was awake, and my arm was a little bit above my head. And do you know those frogs with the three fingers? I guess they're like tree frogs, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I opened my eyes, and there was this frog by my head, really cute, and big eyes, and it grabbed my pinky finger with one of its fingers, and I felt it, and it said, "Do you want to come to the center of the earth with me?" I was like, yeah, and so it took me to the center of the earth, and I remember everything. It was such an adventure, and it was wild. Everyone's so busy down there. There were creatures, and everyone's very, very active, and it's not dark. It's not dark, in this dream, at least, and but, you know, this is how I know it now, so that's the way it is to me. And at one point, it's quite beautiful. It was green, and there were paths and creatures, you know, like the creatures that live in both worlds, like worms and salamanders, they live on our world and they live underneath. They traverse both. Frogs, they all do that. And there was a queen, and at one point the frog took me under a tree. And it said, "Do you notice that something's different?" And I looked around and I couldn't, something was a little off, but I couldn't tell because it was bright. And then there was the tree, and there was the greenness and everything. I said, "Yeah, but I can't tell what it is. Something's missing." And then he said, "There are no shadows." I was like, "There are no shadows, right, because there's no sun." But it wasn't dark. It was bright. It was just so wild. Anyway, the dream wrapped up, and I really want to go back. So I'm looking forward to, you know, Froggy Underworld Part 2.
What an amazing dream. Yeah, you know, and I've told people this so many times, that our dreams are more closer to our spiritual reality than what it is right now in this third dimensional construct. Because what we do is we escape time. We escape the day. So, yeah, there is a lot of truth to your dream, and it's just how you interpret it.
Yeah, and I haven't really interpreted it, like dissected it or anything, because it felt so perfect just as it is. Would like to write a children's book on it, but that's as far as I've gotten. But I have lots that are it was so colorful and brilliant, and I can still feel that the pinky finger grabbing my pinky finger, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was just so perfect. Because you know how you lay on your back or on your side and one arm will be like above your head a little bit and your hand will just be up there. So just grab my finger.
Now, the advice that they have for vivid dreams is you will remember what is important for you to remember. Don't force anything. Above all, stay out of fear. So you remembered exactly what you needed to remember in that dream. And it sounds like a very positive dream. A lot of people talk about inner terrestrials, and there's diverse opinions that are going on, that some are malevolent while some are benevolent. And in your dream, they sound benevolent. They sound friendly. So, you know, I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, I would like to say one thing about the malevolent benevolent issue, if I could.
Sure.
Because I had a very malevolent past, not of my doing, but so I'm quite familiar with those energies. It takes personal work. I don't mean struggle, but I just mean attention to choose your vibration and choose what vibrations you're going to let in to surround you and be around you, whether it be in 3D form or any other form, whether it be ETs or frogs or whatever. It's a real responsibility. And mm-hmm. and you need to declare your energy. And if it becomes muddy, you need to take a step back and be by yourself for a while and go sit under a tree or by the beach or whatever you need to do to make sure you know your energy before you start letting entities in. Because if you don't know what you're about, you're going to become fodder, as so many are on this earth right now, for vampire, you know, energetic vampires of all sorts. You know, we've all had bizarre relationships and that can happen in any dimension. So, but it is a responsibility to make sure you begin to know your own energy and who you are, who you want to be, who you're growing into, and therefore who and what is going to be allowed in your circle, whether it's of this plane or another. I think it's really important.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's move on to number 16, events that completely alter your life. And I think this one might be tied into the dark night of the soul. Just about everybody I've talked to has experienced the dark night of the soul. And that, as we've mentioned before, is a complete blessing, even though it seems like the worst day of your life, which it probably is in this third dimensional incarnation. But, you know, that gives you the opportunity to start to purge your soul and to really spiritually become yourself. Now, this goes on to involve death, divorce, change in job status, loss of home, illness, and other catastrophes, sometimes several at once. Forces that cause you to slow down, simplify, change, and reexamine who you are and what your life means to you. Forces that you cannot ignore. Forces that cause you to release your attachments. Forces that awaken your sense of love and compassion for all. And that it sounds exactly like The Dark Night of the Soul. I know that in, I think it was 2009, I lost my dog. I had to put my dog down to sleep. And he was only 7 years old, a German Shepherd, beautiful dog, my best friend. And it tore me up. And my girlfriend and I at the time broke up. And, it was right before I was guided to build in 5D. And that was my dark night of the soul. And there was one other thing that went on, but apparently my soul has purged it. And shortly afterwards, I ended up watching the Secret, as my ex-wife Amy told me to do, check it out, and I did. And I asked the universe for ideas and suggestions, which led me to building in 5D. So it was really, it all ended up being a blessing. So I'm really grateful for that experience. So have you gone through that dark night of the soul, Heidi? Or have you had events that have completely altered your life at some point?
Many points. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've spoken about it, the accident I had that put me in New York City subways as a performer. An accident, a concussion and whiplash, that flipped everything. But many more as a child, as a teenager, many, many dark nights, which all of them caused me to make right turns. I don't know how else to explain it. It's like you just stop going in the direction you were going in, and you just go in the other. You just turn right. You know what I mean? You just turn in the other direction because there really is no other choice. You can't keep going down the road you were going down because nothing adds up in front of you anymore the way it did.
Once you go down that rabbit hole, you see life completely differently.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if people look at, if people assume that people who are awake maybe have it easy or ascended or spiritual or are lucky or have it easy, but let me say that there are fabulous things to dancing in many worlds at once, but easy is not the adjective I've used to describe this experience, especially right now on the history of this planet, because we're wearing so many hats in so many dimensions at once that it takes, this is probably why you nap a lot, because it takes a lot to dance back and forth. You're doing this show to communicate to people who perhaps are, some people may not know one thing about what we're talking about. And so you're trying to communicate to people who are completely straight out 3D. Maybe their TV broke tonight and this is what they stumbled on. And then you have conversations like you did last week with your friend who is all esoteric. You're both on the same level. And that's a lot of gymnastics, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, energetically, to do, to play. It's a lot. And so I think it's easy. People may think it's easy. I wouldn't use that word. I'm not saying it's bad at all. I wouldn't trade it for the world ever. But it keeps you on your toes, for sure.
Yeah.
And those right turns, every single time, they bring you up higher and higher and higher and higher. And so those dark, you call them dark nights of the soul. I kind of think they're essential for someone at this point. And I'm not saying they're going to be essential for future generations at all. But right now, I feel like those experiences might be essential
to snap people out of the stupor, mm-hmm. to wake them up. So it's sort of like an initiation in a way, if you look at it that way. And it's necessary for many.
I agree. And it's so important for people to realize that, you know, everything that does happen in your life, especially the bad stuff, is pointing you in a specific direction. It's giving you that opportunity to overcome an obstacle that's going to help you in your spiritual progression.
Yeah, and it's what you learn through that process that's of value. It's not necessarily the obstacle itself or the play that you're in at the moment. You know, like we're all actors and da da da. It's what you decide you're taking from it that determines your ascension route.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to number 17, a desire to break free from restrictive patterns, life-draining jobs, consumptive lifestyles, and toxic people or situations. Now it goes on to say that you feel a compelling need to find yourself and your life purpose now. You want to be creative and free to be who you really are. You might find yourself drawn to the arts and nature, and you want to unclutter yourself from things and people that no longer serve you. I think just about everybody can relate to that one, you know, especially the toxic people one. Many people in this field are empaths. I know you are as well as I. And you pick up on these energies, and you just know without that a certain person even saying anything, you know, I might need to just kind of like avoid this person. This person's just going to, like you said, the energy vampires. So what do you think about that? You know, just breaking free from, you know, restrictive patterns, life-draining jobs, consumptive lifestyles, and toxic people or situations.
Yeah, I think I did that a long time ago. I never really conformed, but I've never been one to follow other people's ideas of how my life should be. But as time goes on, I'm less and less aware that even happens out there in the world. Like, I really don't even know what that would feel like anymore. Because I've created my life so I can dance.
And the beauty of what you're doing too, you know, Heidi will play her guitar in the subways, and there are a lot of people who are probably, you know, miserable, but she's bringing this light and raising the vibration. She's doing such a wonderful deed and duty as a light worker to bring this kind of light, especially to a place like New York City in the subways where it's really needed.
Yeah, I people look at us quite. This is one of the reasons I wrote the Subway Diaries, the book, because people look at us, we buskers. Sometimes they look at us and they assume, oh, they must be down here because they can't have another job. They must be homeless. They all these assumptions, which are really popular. The biggest question I get down there is, why are you here? Why are you here? And I always say, why aren't you on American Idol? And which makes me want to gag, of course, or something. And why, they always ask me that. Why aren't you on The Voice? Why aren't you on American Idol? And I always turn to them and I say, because I love you. And they just get all flustered. They don't know what to do. Because I do. You know, I mean, I've said this to you, Greg, but when I go down there, I go there with the intention of raising vibration. That's why I'm there. Because it's the darkest place in this city. It's perhaps one of the darkest places in this country. No one wants to be there except me. And no one wants to stay there any longer than they absolutely have to. So when you get someone who comes up and says, I missed three trains to listen to you, then you've done your job, you know? It smells. It's never the right temperature. It's either too hot or too cold, or there's a drunk, stinky homeless guy going through the trash can behind you that's your backdrop and you can't breathe till he leaves, or there's the drunk guy in front of you singing the lyric to some song you're not singing and talking to the audience at the same time. Or I mean,
And then there's the chains. It's not an easy environment. But but really, if you can grab people and you can move people in the little bit of time you have in between train cars, you've served a purpose. If you can make them forget about what they were angry about when they came down the steps to wait for the train, that's it. That's what you're there for. When I go onto a train car to play and I see those faces, what I do actually, I go on the train car and I look at the car and I look at the people and I feel the vibration of the car, the general vibration, you know? And I get a gauge of where it is. Like, is it very low or is it, are they okay? You know, do they maybe not even need me? And usually, oftentimes there's one person who really wants to throw me on the tracks before I even start because they see my guitar. So I decide to sing to them. And if I can get them to crack a grin or a smile or stop frowning at least in the 3 minutes or 2 minutes I'm there, then I know I've reached the rest of the car and I've raised their vibration.
In the chat room, Dreammaster One said, Heidi, we appreciate you.
Oh.
And yeah. And Yoli went on to say, Heidi, it's admirable. You know, Heidi, it's admirable. I have a son who's done it too. So she can relate to that, your story and what you're going through as well.
Yeah, I appreciate those words. I actually encourage anyone who is an artist of almost any sort, whether it be tap dancer or musician or pantomime or actor, to butt. Because I don't care what you learn in school or conservatory or from the best voice teacher or the best dance teacher, you learn the magic of human communication and energy down there that you, in a way that you'll never learn in any of those institutions I mentioned or from any of those gurus. You just can't learn it that way, the way you learn it in a busking environment. It's something that it's really hard to write about. It's really hard to describe, but it's very tangible when you're experiencing it. So kudos to your son for, I can't remember who it is who said his son was had tried it, but awesome.
That would be Yoli, yeah.
Oh, Yoli, right. Brilliant. Uh-huh. It's brave of them, very brave. So, and it's a magical world down there. I'm madly in love with it. So, because it's one of the last untouched places in Manhattan that's not yet controlled by big money yet. You know, it's the NYPD throws us in jail and sends us to court and tickets us and beats us and arrests us, but it's yet to be owned by Disney or Clear Channel. You know what I mean? There may come a day, but at this moment, it's still ours. So that's very valuable.
Let's move to number 18. Number 18 is emotional and mental confusion, a feeling that you need to get your life straightened out. It feels like it's a mess, but at the same time, you feel chaotic and unable to focus. And that could, once again, be related to the dark night of the soul, straightening out your life, you know, finally reaching that bottom point and having that opportunity to overcome certain things that are in your life to get you pointed in the right direction on your spiritual path.
So without being confused? She says confused.
Well, yeah, it could be. You know, it's like everything is chaos. It's a mess, you know, and it's really at that point, you know, really finding yourself, because ultimately this is what those in power are. It's one of the biggest agendas that they push is the whole divide and conquer premise. For example, you know, yeah, I watched football on Sundays, but I understand the premise behind it. All sports are about divide and conquer, my tribe against your tribe. So, you know, it's just a matter of understanding that and knowing what's behind that. You know, every owner of a team is essentially the slave owner of the players that play for him, even though they belong to a millionaire's club. No different than, you know, slavery has never left. We're all economic slaves. And, you know, and I've always said that once the bottom of the pyramid unites, which is all of us, every race, every ethnicity, once we unite, the rest will collapse. So it's just a matter of us, everybody, on this bottom level, just coming together, and it'll all go away.
Just stop feeding the beast. I mean, and start growing your own, creating your own life. It's true, and then it will just, you'll starve the beast, you know, starve the beast.
Mm-hmm.
But the confusion thing is interesting. As I was biking up today, town, I everything is the vibration for me. So I'm biking through these cherry blossoms that are just coming out, and these woods that are all crunchy and brown, and a few daffodils popping up, and it feels a certain way, you know, and as compared to last summer when it was all green it feels a little different. It's awesome, but it feels different. And as I was coming home, usually on the way home after 2.5 hours of biking or whatever, I feel quite sort of blissful, and I realized I felt a little different today. And I'm wondering how much of this, the confusion word, is because we're all the go-betweens between these dimensions right now, and it's a lot, you know. So you're nothing's really clear cut anymore, you know. Like mm-hmm. a few years ago when I was doing this bike ride, I kind of knew where things stood, you know, kind of. Not, I didn't say completely happy all the time, but I mean, not a pretty happy person. But it's all kind of flipped on its head now, right? So it leaves you a little. You just have to go with it. You just have to be really bendy these days, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Really
now the advice that they say is to put your ear to your heart, and your own discernment will follow. And I think that's really good advice. Listen to your heart and listen mm-hmm. to your discernment.
It forces you to tune into yourself, which is a good thing. We need to. We need to stop tuning out of ourselves and into someone else. We need to tune into ourselves. Greg, I see a number. I see, is 905? Is that Santos?
I'm not sure. I think he'll probably be calling in on Skype, but I just want to tell everyone I just talked to Santos on Skype, and he said give me a few minutes and he'll be on. So hold, hang in there, and Santos will be here. So we can bring that caller in right now, though, if you'd like.
All right, let me do that. Hello.
Hey, how you doing? Beautiful energy and. I didn't catch the gentleman's name.
Oh, Greg. Greg Prescott. He's the Greg. He's the N5D guru. He's the head of this whole thing.
Greg. Awesome.
Hi.
Awesome.
What's your name?
My name is Dennis. I'm Dream Master in the room.
Oh, Dream Master.
Oh, okay.
Jake,
great.
How are you?
What you're mentioning is so on key and such needed to be mentioned. To humanity, really. Your energy is quite prevalent. Picked up on it real fast. First time here.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you. Good. Yeah. Great to have you. Great to have you. You had a question about dreams, I noticed, right?
I work in many ways, and yeah, dreams are one of them. you know, you've touched on so many things, and I felt compelled to call.
We love that.
Again, I love your energy. Your energy is awesome. I don't know where to begin. I don't want to be.
You had a question about dreams. You were saying your dreams. Why do they? I saw it in the chat room. Why do they seem? Why are they? Why do you travel or something? I'm not sure we can answer. But it would be good to have a discussion. I can't remember how you phrased it though.
Well, no, I am quote unquote asked to travel, like people like to label it. You know, I've always called it outer dimensionally planning, right, per se. but you know, recognizing our multi-dimensional beings that we are, right? And we are coming into a remembrance of that. You know, this is what I've been observing, and as you were speaking, and I know you have Santos, I believe, coming on pretty soon. I don't want to consume too much of your time. It's you know, I've noticed that many energy workers, healers, whatnot, are really looking for answers to what is going on with the energy that's occurring right now. And for me, I always go back to source, right? Knowing source within me.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really important is holding ground, right? Keeping a balance, keeping your focus, and coming into center. And these are things that are really important, especially for healers. And the energies that are occurring right now, as being empaths, the energy that is occurring right now, in the last week and a half, really, is really vamped up.
Yes, I noticed that last week. It was this huge surge of energy.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a video that I posted on N5D News, I believe it was today, and it was I was talking about it earlier with it was with Sam Muggsy talking to James Gilliland, and they were both mentioning the same thing that you're talking about, Dennis, about that energy, and at about the same time. So it's not just you; a lot of people are picking up on this.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
It is.
It's like. And remember when I said earlier, it's not your, like when I was seven, it's just me, you know, it's just my energy. And but now it's not. It's like you're floating on some other, you're getting assistance. It's almost like you're floating on a cloud of energy. It's not just you. It's really wild.
Yeah. No, it's awesome to witness. I am somewhat of an observer, and I witness a human condition, and it's very important for anyone who's listening to be grounded.
Yes, right? Yeah.
Because when you start floating around, you can lose yourself, right? You know, people, Greg. If you mentioned to me, you can't astral travel because you will go nuts and insane, and all of a sudden you've got a psychotic condition or whatever. And it's like, well, you have no idea where I go, all right? So unless you've been there, you don't judge me, right? Until you've been in my shoes, you don't tell me how I should live or what I should be thinking or what I should be feeling, right? You know, I know this within myself. And this is a big thing now too, right, is working within, not working outside, not looking outside of yourself for answers. You know source within, which is huge, I believe.
Well, you know, a lot of us, the majority of us are introverts, and it's funny because they say that only 25% of the society is introverted, but yet I find that at least 70 to 80 plus percent of the people that are in this genre are introverts, and And I used this as an example one time. If I was at like this big gala event, this big party or whatever, I'd probably be on the outside edges of it, looking in and just observing and watching people. And it sounds like you'd be the same way, Dennis.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it is.
I would. I'd be kind of wondering when I'd be leaving. I'd be watching and I'd be like, "Where's the door?"
It is very interesting. And when we speak on this now, I just wanted to mention quick, we chose to be here. Right? We chose this time. Many of us see this is the remembrance that we're coming into, of where we came from, of who we are, our soul being. And this is the quickening, per se. This is what I regard it as. Things are occurring in an exponential manner. Things are speeding up. this 40, 50, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, that wasn't even the start. It started millenniums ago. And this is where we are right now. So yeah, the energy is so intense right now. And being healers, energy workers, you know, we're getting hit hard. And this is why I mention that grounding is very so much pertinent. It's almost like it's required, all right? Because otherwise, you'd lose yourself, from this 3D, really. I don't know what else to say. And when you were speaking in regards to dreams, dreams. People ask me, how do you dream the way you dream? To me, and it's like, you really have to negate your subconscious, right? You got to put your ego to the side, right? Because ego comes into your dream, big time. And so does subcon. And if you were to sort out daily situations with individuals, situations, whatnot, on a daily basis, it frees up so much more time, per se.
Mm-hmm.
Because, when you're in your dream, there is no time, per se.
No.
And if you can't figure something out, if you got a problem, a situation, some kind of dispute or whatnot, anything, you'll take it into your dream time. And that's when, as I refer them to, as my my friends, my higher dimensional entity being friends, they'll show you, what needs, what's going on. If you don't remember it, the dream, that's fine. Because it'll come to you through the day, whatever, people call it deja vu, whatnot. When you can clear all of that, stuff, it's like clutter in the closet. You know this, Heidi. You know this, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
It frees up your full conscious being, your being, to travel per se, you know, if you want to put a label on it. I don't like labels. Does that make sense at all?
Oh yeah, you know, especially the, you know, I completely relate to a lot of what you said, you know, especially like what you mentioned about the time thing too, you know, how we do transcend time, how this is really our closest we're going to be to our spiritual self, true being, is when we dream, and we have, you know, we've gone beyond all of these third dimensional constructs once we eliminate all of that fear. So it's great once we can get to that point and have these dreams become positive, and, you know, it's just amazing. So, and actually, and to people who are listening, it's okay that you do have nightmares and dreams of negative influence, because, you know, these are cues, they're opportunities, and it's just your mind working out through metaphor, simple things that have been going on in your life, but pay attention to what's going on. And I believe that's what Dennis is trying to say. Pay attention to some of this stuff, you know, because it's coming up and it's there for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, Greg. Thank you. I have difficulty conveying my thoughts at times. And as a thank you, Greg.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you on. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks. I just wanted to mention one more thing, and I know you're busy. It's another thing too, you know, when I mentioned grounding. You know, Earth, Gaia, universe has so much to offer. They have everything that we require. And when we get wrapped up so much in 3D constructs, distractions, you know, we lose sight, per se. You know, this is where stillness is so important. You know, people call it meditation, and I think it was Dalai Lama mentioned that our best meditation is through dream time. And take, you know, just take heed of the breeze when you have a thought, when you're outside waiting for the bus or whatnot. You're looking for your car and you have a thought and the breeze blows by, or you'll see a bird in flight, or whatever. Nature has so much there for us. The offering is right in front of us, and it's being aware. Right? The awareness. See, a lot of people are becoming aware of these signs that the universe is bringing us, not only in our dream time and through nature, and it's unfortunate that many people are so wrapped up in their stuff that they can't see this. Just take a little bit of time to breathe a little bit. And see it, because it's right there.
Well, you know, part of that grounding process is, like you said, getting out into nature. I took a day yesterday, which I rarely do, and I went to the beach and hung out there with my beach people and came home, took my nap, and went back out to the beach and checked out the drum circle and got into that whole vibration that's going on with the drum circle. It was great. But, you know, I don't get enough of that time for myself, because I'm always busy working on the website 10 to 15 plus hours a day, that I don't get enough time to really connect with nature and things that ground me. I don't do that enough. So it was really good to do that, and that was a good point that you brought up. Now, hey, Dennis, I see we have another caller coming in right now. I'm going to let you go at that point.
Right.
But thank you for calling in.
All Yeah, well,
thanks, Dennis, for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Heidi. All right, great show.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
Yeah, love the energy.
Thank you.
Yay.
All right. Take care, brother. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Oh, good job.
Okay, we have, I'm not sure who this one is.
Uh-oh. Greg, did you leave? I think we lost three people at once. Oh, wow. Hold on. Let me see. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. Who is this?
This is Kendra Gilbert from Ocala, Florida.
Hi, Kendra. I'm sorry. For some reason, we've lost Greg for the moment, but he'll be on with us again. How are you this evening?
That's fine. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. I'm good. So what's on your mind?
Well, you know, I've been listening since you guys started tonight's show, and I'm just, you know, this is the first in 5D radio show that we've been able to listen to. I've been just really busy, but I'm glad that I was able to get on the Blog Talk Radio show and listen. But, you know, you guys have been talking a lot about dreams and, you know, different symptoms and everything for spiritual, you know, awakening or ascension process, and I just find it really interesting. But I wanted to mention, too, you know, when you're talking about the dreams and everything, when it comes to our children, like, you know, we have a six-year-old little boy, and, you know, he, for the most part, you know, it's not like we've, you know, sheltered him so much that, you know, it's, you know, like we've got him in a glass jar or anything, but we do try to keep him away from certain types of TV programming. We don't want him to sit there and drool into the television, and he's got a very vivid imagination to begin with, but some of the dreams that even our kids, and if parents would just, I think, listen when our little ones talk to us, we can really, really see so many wonderful things that are happening in their minds and in their world, too, because, our son is talking to us about things that are just phenomenal, and he's coming up with all of these imaginary things that, you know, just blow me away, and, you know, I just think that when we're talking about all these things, we really need to listen to our little guys, too, and see what's going on in their minds.
Do you have an example? I'd love to hear one of his adventures if you can remember one.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, and it's not only that, too, but I also noticed that I know when his dreams are coming from him and when they're being influenced. You know,
right.
We do let him play video games, and you know, at times he loves the Lego, the video games, you know. But, you know, there's been times when he's come to us and, you know, in the morning and has talked to us about, you know, characters and his video games coming into his dreams. And I don't know if that's necessarily a healthy thing, because I don't know if it's allowing, you know, a part of his mind to kind of be, I don't know, hijacked by programming, or if it's, you know what I'm saying? It's almost like
right.
can tell. You can just like when you give a kid sugar and they start acting all crazy and stuff, well, you know it's obviously not them that's really doing that. It's because it's a side effect or a symptom. But you can tell.
Can you also tell, does your son's dream, your children's dreams, do they actually tell you things you don't know yet? Like, are they learning experiences for you as well when you listen? Do they propel you forward?
Yeah, very, very much so. You know, our youngest, I'm really feel blessed. I feel like even though I gave birth to him, he really doesn't, I don't know, he's just this amazing old soul, I feel. And, yes, I do. I've learned quite a bit from him. He blows me away sometimes with the things that he says and comes up with that I know are really genuinely coming from him and not something he's seen or heard or was programmed by some crazy thing you've seen on TV. So,
right.
I mean, my thing is I just feel like it's so important for parents to pull our kids away from that television and from those things that are influencing them and let them discover who they are instead of them, you know, being, you know, they get enough of that programming junk when they're in school. You know what I'm saying? Get them
really
outside
important.
And get them doing things out there.
You know, I got to jump in here. The Skype gods booted me off, and I didn't have a chance to say hi to Kendra.
Now,
hi, Kendra. Hi, Lars. I know you're listening in. Now, I met Kendra and Lars over at Siesta Key Beach last year, and they are amazing people. They have these, and I sound like I'm their biggest promoter, which I probably am. But they have this amazing friggin' soap that is like they're selling it for pennies on the dollar. It's worth a lot more than what they're charging. They charge hardly anything for it. And it's just the most amazing soap ever. I've got, I don't know, how many? 15 bars of it, maybe? And I haven't used one of them because they just smell so good and they look so great. There's an ad on N5D called Sacred Holistics. And anyone listening, check them out. I mean, they're such good people, and their products are absolutely amazing. Had to say that. So, okay, let's continue.
Greg, you're off. Thank you. You're very,
welcome.
Very kind to
it's
us.
The truth.
We appreciate you and what you guys do, too. So, I mean, we're really thankful. I just had to chime in because, you know, so many things are happening, and I'm listening to you guys talking about all of these different symptoms that people are having and the dreams, and that really sparked my attention just because, like I was saying, you know, our little one has been coming to us and telling us, you know, about his different dreams. And like I was telling Heidi, you know, I can always tell when they're truly genuinely his dreams or when there might be, you know, influence from outside sources, you know, creeping into his mind in the middle of the night. So we are trying really hard to give him a break, you know, between and let his own mind, his own imagination work for him instead of letting something else program it for him. You know, I mean, it's a lot easier just to plop your kids down in front of the television when you're stressed out and you're busy and you're just trying to find, you know, 5 minutes to cook dinner. But, man, put them down in front of a pile of dirt and show them how to, you know, cover up a seed or, you know, let them do something that's, you know, creative or imaginative and get them away from that television because it's ridiculous, crazy. I mean, if I fall asleep and the TV's playing in the background, it affects me. I go to bed dreaming about, you know, Family Guy episodes. It's awful. You know, all of a sudden I got Peter Griffin coming into my dream at night. It's like, what are you doing here? And so, you know, I mean, it's crazy. But I just really appreciate you guys, what you're doing and everything. And we love you. And I guess I'm done rambling, but... But, yeah, so keep up the good work, please, and don't go anywhere on us.
Oh, hell no. No. We're here for the whole entire process, and thank you for calling. And definitely don't be a stranger. You know, you or Lars, you know, call in anytime. You know, you're great people.
Right.
Love you guys.
Maybe show on this topic, actually. I like the whole children letting them really expand in who they really are. I think it would be a really good a show because it's worth an entire, at least an hour. It's very important. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, and we were also looking at some of Santos's earlier work, like the Reclaiming Dominion videos, and he talks about how children are still so close to the source when they come in or they're incarnated in this life, and that a lot of times, you know, they try to tell us that they're seeing things or experiencing things, and the parents either, you know, don't understand what they're talking about, so they either, you know, just poop it off, like, oh, okay, whatever, yeah. Or they're, you know, afraid that somebody's going to hear them talking, and they don't want to have that ridicule or people questioning them. But, you know, in fact, they're little gods and goddesses coming into the world that, you know, really have a lot to say and to teach us, and it's sad to see them shunned like that. You know, and cut off, and then just, you know, it just feels like that we're really doing a disservice to humanity by cutting off our kids' rights to, you know, be who they are and who they're meant to be. It's just terrible. It drives me crazy. But anyway.
Well,
all
you
right.
And Lars are going to have to come back down to Siesta Key Beach again and take advantage of that 99% quartz crystal sand. And, yeah, definitely.
Yep,
next time,
yep,
bring your bathing suits. You guys were, like, sweating last time in the middle of summer.
Yeah. Well, I will definitely keep that in mind for this summer, and we're definitely on our list of things. We want to come back up there and hang out again. That was cool. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you'll have to check out Sacred Holistics also, the metaphysical store I was telling you about.
You mean Elysian Fields?
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. Yeah, Yeah, that was your place. Yeah, Elysian Fields. Yes.
Greg, you're awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Love you to death. All righty. Namaste, you guys. Too. Thank you.
Namaste. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks,
Ken. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, so Santos is right now asking me if he's able to call in through Skype. I'm giving him our Skype number, and we should have him here any second now. So everybody, thank you for being patient. I got to tell you though that Santos has a lot on his plate. I know that he's got a new movie that he's working on, and he wants to get that up and going as soon as possible. And he's working to get that going, and he's got everything else on his plate. He does so much to help humanity.
He's about to fly to Ecuador, right? He's about to fly to Ecuador to start filming there, so it's insane for him right now.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Santos says he's in, and he hears us right now, but I don't see him on the switchboard. I'm sure he'll pop up shortly. Yeah, so we're just waiting to see his number pop up here on the switchboard. He says he's in and he hears us right now. But I don't see him on the switchboard yet. So.
There
is a way to bring them in too as the host, but I'm not the host. You're hosting and I'm co-hosting, calling as the co-host this week.
Do you want me to go off and then you can bring him in?
That might work as well. Oh, there he is.
All right.
Yes. Awesome. We're going to bring his mic live. And all right, guys, thank you for being patient. We have a very special Australian guest tonight, or this morning in Santos's case, who is known on YouTube as Mr. Astrotheology, and if it wasn't for his videos, then none of us would have as thorough of an understanding about what's going on in this world and how it all ties into astrology, astrotheology, and the occult sciences. So it is truly my pleasure to introduce everyone to Santos Bonacci. Hi, Santos. Welcome to N5D Radio.
Oh, thanks, Greg. It's my pleasure. Absolutely. I could have been on earlier if I didn't have so much computer trouble either. So.
Hi, Santos. It's Heidi. How are you? Thanks for showing up.
Hey, Heidi. Thank you kindly for inviting me on. My pleasure.
Well, all of our N5D Radio listeners are curious about my first question. As we approach the Golden Age, where is the evolution of humanity and consciousness heading?
Wow, yeah, that's a biggie, isn't it? that's a biggie. But with the air, the fixed air of Aquarius, see, always add the stars in all of your understanding. As the heavens line up to so that the equinox is in Aquarius, so the equinox is pointing to Aquarius, it will channel in Aquarian fixed air energy for humanity. We are always going up, always, unless we choose to go sideways or backward. That's a personal choice. There are people on the planet who are going sideways. They're going nowhere, forward or up. And there are people that are really, really going backwards. These would be your banksters, people who have no problems extinguishing the life of a fellow human being for profit and, fiat currency. And we've seen that. We know all about that negativity. Those people are definitely going backward. But we the enlightened, the conscious, we have the help of the stars now. We always have. Pisces always kept us underwater. Pisces is about deception with Neptune as its ruler and Jupiter, the tyrant, in his negative capacity. But there's also another exultant planet in Pisces, and that's Venus. So you have to look at those three orbs. But in particular, Neptune in between the two benefics, Jupiter and Venus. See, Pisces should be a really good, happy old age. A happy age, rather, because of Jupiter, the ruler, and Venus, the exalter. They are benefics. But you see, deception comes in through that watery element. Now we are in air, and air is humane. It's mental. It's spiritual. Humanity has a great opportunity to make big advancements. You and I and the listeners, we are poised to take those benefits and receive them because we're here. You know, we're having this conversation. We are looking for betterment and improvement. And those ones will receive that. We will receive that. And so we can only look forward to the Aquarian mini golden age that has always been promised. In fact, Giordano Bruno, even earlier than that, I think of the Renaissance, Pico and his master and his teacher Ficino, Marsilio Ficino, they would greet each other in the Renaissance days as a salute to Saturn, knowing that when his dominion comes back in the age of Aquarius, all things will be sorted out and balanced and leveled out, because Jupiter just gives too much of a good thing, which turns out to be a bad thing. Jupiter has given us, along with his consort Juno, money, capitalism, abundant material wealth at the expense of poor people. So we've seen unbalance for 2,000 years. The two fish, they give you two things, good and evil. All the mutable signs do. The mutable signs are noted for this. But fixed signs, well, they're fixed. This is fixed air. All the great astrologers know that when we enter air, humanity prospers and benefits more than any other signs. The other signs might be inspirational, like Aries, but it's animalistic. It's a ram. Leo, the passion, but it's a lion, a roaring lion. The horse, even. Beautiful sign. There's a man coming up out of a horse. In other words, humanity coming up out of the animal nature. But it's still not as perfect as Aquarius. This is why the scriptures, the New Testament, Jesus says, when you see the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens, know that the kingdom of heavens is drawn near. So it's all up. All up positive.
You know, based on the writings of Sri Yukteswar, and I've heard you quote him before, we're on the threshold of the Golden Age. Would that be the mini Golden Age? And do you think this is accurate? And if so, when will it begin?
Well, I think it's we've gone through the portal on the 21st of December 2012. That date was definitely singled out by many, many calendars. And in particular, we refer to the Mayan calendar, but certainly we did go through something very, very special. We are now on the other side of what was, what we have known. And the elites have pushed their program of economy, capitalism, growth, New World Order, and all of this for a good solid 200 years now. And in particular, they have, been promoting a very old school economic system which no longer serves us. From, you know, it's an Austrian school from the 1900s, and it was great when the Industrial Revolution was still happening, but it doesn't work anymore. And so that was all under the auspices of Jupiter and Juno, and the deception of Neptune and the lust of Venus also in the age of Pisces. We have two new rulers now, Uranus and Saturn, and those guys don't mess around. They don't give you a gift so that they can then give you, a poisoned gift which will hurt you in the end. These guys don't mess around. Uranus, whatever we get from Uranus in the next 2,000 years will be illuminatory. It'll be inspirational. It will be true. It'll be from the higher realms. Uranus is the first orb outside of Saturn's. So he means he the name Uranus means heaven. So the heavens are here. But 2012 is a very important date for all the keen listeners who love their astronomy. You might want to get a pen and paper. I'll jot down some figures for you, and you'll understand what 2012 is all about from a Bible perspective. JC, or Jesus Christ, and notice, if there was a Yeshua, a prophet, a great divine ascended master who was called a savior, he wouldn't have been called Jesus, because that's just short for Jupiter and Zeus, Jesus. And the Romans did that for convenience. But if we're talking about a Jewish dude that kicked around in the Middle East around that time, his name would have been Yeshua. And there would have been a lot of differences between him and the Gospel Jesus. The Gospel Jesus is a literary creation, pure and simple, just like Humpty Dumpty, just like Santa Claus. Great truths, great morals, great teachings, but they are literary, not literal. So we the wise, hopefully, I don't consider myself wise, but I do consider myself enlightened rather than educated. We know the difference between a literary work and a literal work. So what you'll find in the Gospels is that Jesus, the so-called JC, was born 4 BCE. So that's 4 years before the zero date of the beginning of the Common Era. Now, I have shown many, many times in my presentations that JC stands for Julian Calendar or Julius Caesar. And many, many great writers have pointed this out way before me. It's not original. I'm just repeating, but it's true. JC is the Julian Calendar, which began on the 4th of the era before our Common Era. Now, if you add 4 years plus 2012, you come to the magical number of 2016. Now, most people who understand the cycle of precession will automatically resonate with that number, 216. If you get all the planets, Jupiter, the big boys, from Jupiter up to Pluto, those five planets, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, you will find that they all have cycles that that converge on the year 2016. In other words, if you do 72 cycles of Saturn, you will come to 2016 years. Uranus has an orbit of 84 years. Multiply that by 12, you come to 2016 years. Neptune has an orbit of 168 years. Multiply that by 6, you come to 2016 years. Pluto, I'll go back to Neptune, 168 years, multiply that by 12, excuse me, and then go back to Uranus and multiply that by 24. 24 revolutions of Uranus give you 2016 years. This is all exact. This is all precise. Now, for the listeners who are keen, they might want to grab a book called Key to Heaven, Key to the Bible and Heaven by Ludwig B. Larson. And you will find Jupiter also. We haven't done Jupiter yet. Jupiter, once you multiply his 12-year orbit, you'd need to do that, I think, about 140 times. I'm just trying to find the figures here so I can be more exact. But all you need to do is grab a calculator and you'll work out exactly how many times Jupiter has to go around to do exactly 2016 years. Anyway, the point being, folks, is that 2016 years is the exact figure that they give for the rulership of an astrological sign. Now, some will argue that it's 2160, and you will notice again 216 turning up again. Because what they do is they take the processional year number of 25,920 and divide it by 12. Well, that gives you 2,160 years. So most of your astrologers will tell you, most of your scientists, that a processional month is 2,160 years. But if you grab a calculator and work on the five big orbs, you'll find that they all converge harmonically at 2016. And there you have evidence in one of the most sacred books ever written that we have this particular time period very, very well known, very well mapped out and prophesied about. This is why everyone was looking at the year 2016. They won't tell you, the Vatican will never tell you that that was a marked date and that it marks out exactly 2016 years, which is a magical convergence harmonic number for the five timekeepers of our solar system. All of them. Now, Pluto is out by a handful of years, but because his orbit is 248 years, he drops 8 years each time he goes around. But point being, he still converges around about that magical figure of 2016. So I'm really, really happy to have shared this magical number. It is clear also in the Bible, just in case people don't know the scriptures very well, in the Gospel of Luke, the first two chapters, you need to read those two chapters to find this information, that the so-called Jesus was born at the time of Herod, because you see, we remember that Herod wanted to kill this new king. He didn't want this new king. So he sent, supposedly, he sent killers to go after and kill this little boy. Now, history tells us that this particular person, historical person, Herod the Great, died exactly on the year 4 BCE. So we have the evidence there, and we have the time span of 2016 years, and there it is. And Uranus is the true marker, the true planetary marker of this 2016 year period. If you halve 2016, you get 1,008 years. So 12 orbits of Uranus mark a 1,000-year period pretty much to the year. You can round it off to 1,000 years. I mean, 1,008 years. You know, you're going to round that off to 1,000, aren't you? So this is why the Bible repeatedly says that a day with man is like 1,000 years with God. It's talking about the planets. Everything is there. All the keys are there. Every single number in the Bible is dealing with processional numbers. Why is 72 such a precious number in the Bible? 12, 7, 40, and I'll stop right there. I can mention 30, I can mention 36, I can mention 153. Why did the apostles, after Jesus died and was ready to resurrect, why did they count the fish that they had caught to be 153 fish? Well, Pythagoras will tell you that. That's the number of the fish. It's the number of the Vesic Pisces, or the age of Pisces. And so there it is, in the last chapter of the Gospel of John, they had to mention 153 fish that were caught in a net. They don't do this to make 153 fish famous so that they get their you know, they get their number in the Holy Bible. They do that to leave hints. And there's thousands of these hints. Thousands of them. The Bible's dripping wet with astrological key numbers, and we are just missing them because we're looking for a literal explanation of these things, which we will never, ever find unless we have the key to understanding that it is an astronomical treatise. It's a great registry of astronomical wisdom.
Okay, well, staying on topic, once the Pope stops wearing the doggone fish mitre, fish head mitre, will that signify the end of the Age of Pisces, or will they try to continue that symbolism for as long as they can?
They would show themselves to be a pack of dunces if they continued with the Dogon's mitre. They would need a Uranian or a Saturnian image now. They know that we are in the age of Saturn and Jupiter has been dethroned. So hence the first Jesuit Pope in history, they are Saturnian. They wear black. They have all of the Saturnian attributes. They are assassins. They kill for the Pope. They will murder and poison, and they will do all of those Saturnian things. The other thing is they've been promoting their new logo of their new world order for a long time, and that would be the Star of David, the so-called, the Seal of Solomon. The Zionists that are nothing but a Vatican arm, just like the Jesuits and the Bilderbergers and the Club of Rome, the Knights of Malta, the Knights of Columbus, and all of these killers, they've been since the 40s, at least since Israel was a nation, they've been promoting the Star of David. Well, that's the Star of Saturn. It never has been anything other than Saturn's symbol, the hex. Hex has to do with Earth. Saturn rules Earth. He is earthy. He is agricultural. He is everything to do with the number six. And so they have been poncing around on this globe, showing quite boldly their new symbol, just as the Julian family was doing before in the Aryan Age, before Pisces began in 4 BCE. They were telling people that we're going to have an empire and it will be based on Christianity. It will be based on Jesus. The Flavians, it has been exposed quite beautifully by Joseph Atwell and many other writers, how the Flavians, who took over from the Julians, were the first to promote the Piscean Christian Jesus age. And it took them 300 years till Constantine, till they were able to successfully make Jesus, Jupiter Zeus, the new hero who would ultimately debunk Mithras in Rome, who was very prominent, Sabazius, Osiris, Horus, Isis, and all of the other exactly the same archetypes. So what they did was they wanted to have one hero, and rather than do what all the other cultures before them did, was to, and Rome was also, during the Republic days, she was very embracing of other cults. You know, the Persian Mithras was well received in Rome. Isis was well received in Rome. They were not necessarily polytheistic. There's always been just the one God. This is what churchgoers can never grasp. Even though a multiplicity of gods are respected, there is always the one creator God. Only dunces do not understand this. And so this is why they like to corrupt the truth and teach that polytheists, you know, have have no concept of the one universal consciousness, which is totally erroneous. All astrologers, all Hermetic philosophers, and wise men and women of the past have had both systems in their practice, because this is how it works. There is one creator, and he has expresses the creation through his archetypal energies, and these are what we call gods. In fact, in the Bible, they call them angels. So it's not really a big stretch for these monotheists to understand that they too acknowledge gods, plural. Only mm-hmm. they call them angels, and they think that that they are exempt from scrutiny because they call these creatures, these archetypes, angels, servants of God, whereas back in good old Rome, in Republic days, they called them gods. Same difference, same archetypes.
Mm-hmm. Now, I called in as a guest on your syncretism show and asked you about Pluto and Capricorn. Now, for those of you who are unaware, Pluto entered Capricorn in 2008 and doesn't leave until 2023. Now, if you all remember, and right on schedule, 2008 was the year of the banking collapse, and in that year I made a video called Banking Collapse Announces the Beginning of the Golden Age. This is why we're seeing a collapse in government, money, and religion. Now, the last time that Pluto was in Capricorn was in 1776 during the American Revolution, and if you look around, there are revolutions going on all around the world, and this is not a coincidence. Pluto is known as the destroyer and tears down all that is bad and gives us the opportunity to rebuild everything with that which is good. So, Santos, in your opinion, how will Pluto and Capricorn continue to play out for the next 10 years?
Oh, yeah, good question. Well, I'm interested in the aspects and the angles that Pluto is forming with his brothers in the sky, for instance, Uranus, and the other planets, but let's pay particular attention to Uranus in Aries and Pluto in Capricorn. Both of these orbs are very, very destructive to the powers that be or that were. Both of them, they do not handle these two orbs very well at all. You mentioned correctly about the revolutions that happened in the late 1700s, and that was exactly as you said, because Pluto was transiting Capricorn. What he destroys when he's there and transforms at the same time is everything that's Capricorn represents. Now, let's deal with that for a little bit. Capricorn is ruled by Saturn. Saturn is very serious. And Saturn rules all of those conventional institutions, you see. Outside things from you, outside of you, things that are outside of you, power, supposed power and authority outside of you through governments, not religions. Just political, because the Capricorn Cancer solstitial axis is purely political. Now, let me just read from Ptolemy, the great astrologer from 2,000 years ago, just so that we can understand what I'm saying here, that the solstice is a political and governmental axis, whereas the equinox with Aries, that has to do with religion and balance and spirituality and ecclesiastical concerns. So let's first of all see if I can find the quote by Ptolemy. Usually just jumps out of because I've marked it in the book. But Pluto is destroying those external political things and transforming them. He will be squaring with Aries. Now, a square is a very strong angle. That's 90 degrees, of course, because Aries and Capricorn are 90 degrees perpendicular to each other. So, and you'll find that these squares are very, very strong because Pluto is around about the 7th or 8th degree of Capricorn, and Uranus is around about the 7th or 8th degree of Aries. So it's pretty, pretty strong. Now, let's have a look. Yeah, so with Uranus, Uranus is revolutionary. He's rebellious. Very individualistic. I have Uranus in the first house. So if you want a perfect example of a Uranian type of person on the planet, just think of me. I don't fit in anyone's box. I never have. I never will. I rebel against so-called authority. It just doesn't exist, in my opinion, in my knowing. Not opinion, in my knowing. I've always been pretty original. I've been reminded of that. If I had a dollar for every time I was reminded that through my whole life, I'd be a billionaire. So you're going to have some nastiness toward established fictional religions with Uranus in Aries. Now, these two orbs are going to be squaring 7 times during this transit. Now, 7 is a lot of squares. That is a lot of squares. Normally, when they square off at each other, they probably square off 3, 4, 5, 6 at the most times. 7 is pretty much max. To have two planets squaring on and off 7 times over a period of about 2 or 3 years, starting from 2011 through 2014, is very, very significant. The religious institutions and the political institutions are going to take a very, very big hit. And look out for the end of Aries, around about the 17th of April, 18th, 19th. You will hear, there will be some more stuff similar to what's already happened in Aries. We've had at the start of Aries, late March, we had Ireland telling the banks where to go, a la Iceland. And we've had a big meeting in South Africa of the BRIC nations, and they're already about to launch a new currency for the planet to put an end to the blood and killing of the Federal Reserve System and to put that dollar to rest as JFK tried to do 40 years ago. So 50 years ago. So the BRIC nations are very, very determined to crash this disgusting evil dollar, which does not belong to Americans. It's a currency which belongs to the filthy, filthy, killing 1% banksters who have nothing better to do than just to steal and benefit themselves. Now, going back to Ptolemy, page 57 of his Tetrabiblios, 4 books, famous work, this one, page 57. The equinoctial signs further indicate the circumstances liable to happen in ecclesiastical concerns and in religious matters. The tropical signs give warning of changes in the atmosphere and in political affairs. I'll stop right there. Say no more.
Wow.
So Capricorn is definitely political. You've got to remember, it's the 10th sign. By the time the sun gets there, the sun is severely diminished. It is the weakest, it's the sign of the weakest potency of the sun. The sun is, the shortest days start from the 21st of December, which is the start of Capricorn. The sun is suffering, but the rays of the sun, as Manly P. Hall puts it, are penetrating rather than speeding up or growing, because in Aries is the blossom season. So the sun's rays all the way through to Leo 5 months later, the next fire sign, the sun's rays are actually growing things, whereas the sun in Capricorn is different. It has to pierce and penetrate through matter. It cannot quicken matter. Nothing grows. Everything shrivels and dies and contracts. Therefore, the rays of the sun are of that introverted, penetrating, self-reflecting nature. This is why people do a lot more thinking and writing and reading books during the winter when the sun's in Capricorn. So this sign is cardinal Earth. Earth is the planet. The planet is Earth. So it has to do with kings and ruling and established institutions, political institutions, because it's earthy. It's to do with this Earth. So Pluto transiting there but squaring with Uranus, if Uranus wasn't in Aries, it wouldn't be such a powerful destruction. But rest assured, these two working together are going to totally transform the face of this planet politically, geopolitically, and religiously. You will find that people are going to make their own path. They're not going to be going to church with Uranus in Aries. They're going to be thinking for themselves. They're going to revolt against the stupidity of patriarchal, monotheistic trash that has been shoved down our throats, and with the fear of getting your head cut off with a Bible in one hand and a sword in another, is how we have been seduced to accept this perversity of a doctrine. And so people are going to free themselves. They're going to turn to the Creator, which is, well, the Bible tells you God is light. They are going to adore and worship light. And in particular, the still magnetic light, which is the Creator. All things that we see, all of them, anything that you see is a thought wave which emanates from the still, undivided, pure, balanced, powerful, truthful, and loving magnetic light that God is.
Now, Santos, you have an American Freedom Radio show today. Is that in 45 minutes or is that in an hour and 45 minutes?
I'm hunching it's in about 2 hours and 45 minutes because daylight saving visited us on Sunday this week. So last week it was at 1 p.m. Today it will be at 2 p.m. So in about two hours, yeah.
Okay, great. Now, Heidi, you have a question, right?
Yeah, I thought it would be a good time to ask it, Santos. And you were speaking about the financial energy switching and religious. And I'm here in New York City where everything is extreme. And I went by a building site today, and they're starting, after the crash, it stopped building. And so it's a big hole in the ground the last number of years and after since 08. And the foreman said it's... I said, really? They're starting to build again? And he said, oh, yeah. Apparently, this year is going to be the best year for construction ever. And I'm like, I got to ask Santos about that because it seems like there's these such strong opposing energies going on. And I wanted to know what you think about that, because in New York, you don't see a lot of the – there's a big facade going on. So I'd like to know what you think about that, because everything's continuing on as if nothing's happening, and it's a bit bizarre.
Oh, look, the elites have got access to all kinds of astronomical figures when it comes to money. They've got the CAFRA accounts that they know about. They talk about the budget, which is a limited mentality type of approach to controlling people. They tell you that we're short of everything. We're short of air, we're short of water, we're short of everything. So they've got to control it all and charge your taxes for controlling unlimited resource that the universe provides us. So they can pull this off. They can actually make it appear as if, you know, they can do anything they want through their media and through their political agencies to make it look like there is a revival and there is, you know, economic growth. They play with us. You see, they're playing with us all the time. Now, even if it is true, which is probably a good thing short term because it gives people jobs. I don't know why people want jobs. I would rather come to this planet and do work, good work, not jobs. Probably explains why I've only had, you know, very few jobs in my life. Anyway, rest assured, if this money is going to go toward building projects where they build skyscrapers that reach the heavens that look like phallic monstrosities, rest assured that it will only, you know, go on for another few months, because all of these ridiculous phallic male type buildings will be a thing of the past one day. We will laugh at how stupid we were to ever have built one of these dangerous monstrosities and to put people in and house them in these buildings so that their feet don't touch the earth and so that they're not connected with their mother and they're up there in the skies. It's, you know, I mean, it's just so ridiculous. This whole idea of building cities with towers that reach the heavens started way back in the corrupt empires of Babylon, Egypt, not the enlightened empires, but when they were corrupted with the coming of the Iron Age, you see. And so men, not women, men have always thought that the taller the building, the more prestige they have, you see. So Donald Trump has got this great big phallic sitting there in New York, and he wants to impress all the girls with his beauty pageants and all of this crap that he's doing. And they all want to impress someone, you know, and I believe there are people that are actually impressed with these monstrosities. Go figure. But this is how it works. We will, even if there is an economical revival and there's all this building going on, it won't last long. People will revert to off-the-grid eco-villages, communities, and we will all just be free and have a party once all of these corrupt agencies are destroyed by our consciousness, and once that, you know, unrepentant wrongdoers are jailed, you know, and there's plenty of those. You can just look around and see that they're not really repenting in their droves and saying, oops, sorry, we've been sodomizing you folks with all sorts of ridiculous taxes. You don't really actually need to pay taxes. That was just a Ponzi scheme to make the 1% very, very happy while you all suffered. You don't really need to take vaccinations. You might want to let your own body be its own immune system. I think it's the best immune system ever invented in the universe. So a little bit of pussy thimerosal is not going to help your little babies, you know, be healthier. In fact, it's going to give them arthritis, diabetes, and all sorts of shit when they grow older, because they've got a time thing with the vaccinations. They make you sick after many years, not straight away. Because if they did make you sick straight away the way they're supposed to, then these vaccination companies, that Bill Gates and that, they'd get busted straight away. They would get busted. They'd be out of business. So they put that time capsule. What do you call it when you make a poison not to go to effect straight away? It takes effect after weeks or months or years. Anyway, that's what they do with the vaccination.
Like a time release kind of thing.
Exactly. So then people, you know, 20 years later, they've got arthritis and they go to their doctor. Oh, I've got arthritis. I've been eating well. I don't know why I've got arthritis. Of course, because they've been vaccinated. And then the doctor, the well-trained doctor, will give them another treatment. Here's a treatment for you. You know, all of this has been a big fiction. It's all been about making money for the very, very few. And they're going to have to come clean. If they don't come clean, there will be arrests. There will be mass arrests coming up. Definitely there will be mass arrests. And many of these types, these creepy types, will have to be jailed. I mean, the bar alone has put 7 million innocent Americans in jail. They're languishing in jails just so that their securities and bonds that the bar have created through their court constructive court cases, making them hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. It makes the bar much more money to have people in prison than to be free. They can get a lot more taxes and a lot more revenue from jailed people than free people. So this is why you have all these people in prison.
Hey, Santos, you once said one of the most profound...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just want to thank you. That timeline is awesome. Thank you.
Santos, you once said one of the most profound things I've ever heard, and I'm paraphrasing. You said that from the moment the sperm fertilizes the egg, we begin dying. We were alive before that. Do you believe that we all chose the exact time and date of our current incarnations?
Yes, absolutely. It is a choice, and this is how it happens. Thomas H. Burgoyne, in The Light of Egypt, Volume 1, explains that when the two parents are together in matrimony, in conjugal relationship, the soul that is wishing to incarnate will enter into incarnation at the propitious and appropriate time when all the celestial dynamics are in place for that soul to incarnate. So in that sense, it is a choice, yes, because we choose the configuration of the planets at the time that we are conceived. Because that energy that is with the two parents when they are together, conceiving a child, those energies resonate with the soul, usually. Sometimes accidents and mistakes do happen. And this is where children are born in families that are totally, totally misfits in that family, you know, black sheep, or, you know, they come out really antagonistic towards the rest of the family. They have strong criminal inclinations, and they set themselves totally apart from the rest of the family. They go against the flow. These are mistakes that happen because it's an imperfect, well, it's, I wouldn't even call it imperfect. It's just the way it is. But usually, you incarnate in a soul group, in a family that has the same dynamics in their souls. Their souls come from a similar place. And you'll find that with families. You'll see that. You'll see how some families, they all seem like one cohesive unit, you know. They're really glued well together and they love each other and they're just beautiful units. Whereas other families are divided and contrasting and stuff like that. So, but certainly our souls come into incarnation when the timing is right and when we choose those energies that we need to continue in our path. Some of those energies are very harsh. Why people choose to be born under a grand cross, for instance, is perplexing. And yet I have a sister who was born under a grand cross, and she's got all the health troubles that you can possibly imagine, severely overweight and obese, mental problems like you wouldn't believe. She's 54 and she hasn't been able to unlock the child, you know, the adult within, and she's been very, very childish all her life. She was hit by a car when she was very, very young and traumatized. A grand cross, and in particular a cardinal grand cross that she was born under, is very, very strong and very, very powerful. Now, I can say truthfully and clearly that she is definitely the black sheep of the family. She contrasts with her mother, she contrasts with her father, and she contrasts with the rest of the five other family members. She's always antagonistic toward all of us. Firstborn, Saturn in the first house, which ensures that you will be a firstborn. If you have Saturn or Jupiter in the first house, it's more than likely that you are the firstborn. And with a grand cross, you can expect mental and emotional and physical difficulties. Now, I've studied lots of people with grand crosses, and not all of them have these troubles. But certainly, they have come into the world at a time when they know that they're going to have some challenges. And yet they take these challenges on because they have so much work to do. And whatever you have in your chart, I've never seen a chart that is totally, totally awful and destructive. There is beauty in everyone's chart. You just have to find it, and you just have to see it for what it is. Every chart is a special snowflake, and they are all beautiful, and they are all precious, and all of them have good things and bad things, what we call good and bad, simply because this is the cycle of necessity. It is necessary upon us to polish this rough diamond of a soul that we have, and to raise it and bring it up to the next level always, wherever we are in incarnation. That is the purpose of incarnation, to work and sublimate the grosser elements of our bodies.
You know, you've mentioned that the ascendant and the midheaven are the two most important features in anyone's birth chart. Can you explain why? And before you explain that, actually, Santos did a birth chart reading for me last week, and it was amazing. And maybe you can also explain how people can get in touch with you to have one. But, yeah, you were mentioning about the midheaven and the ascendant being very important. Can you comment on that?
Yeah. The ascendant is the rising sign. That angle is the most powerful of all the angles, what we call the four angles. And they roughly correspond to the cardinal angles that I mentioned earlier. Aries, Libra on the equinoxes, and Cancer, Capricorn on the solstices. The Aries, Libra brings balance and spiritual concerns. The Cancer, Capricorn on the tropics, this brings about imbalance, and it brings about political concerns and worldly concerns, rather earthy, materialistic concerns, rather than the spiritual ones of Aries, Libra. But the houses, the house system, that's another thing altogether. The houses or the angles, they are called movable angles. And so the cardinal, when we're talking about the signs, we refer to cardinal signs. When we're talking about the houses, we refer to those as movable, angular, the angular signs. Now, the first and most powerful sign in anyone's chart is the ascendant, the first house, the rising sign. As it rises, all other planets that aspect with it give strength to it. The midheaven is the second most powerful point. That's where the sun reaches midday. So the ascendant is where the sun would be rising. And the midheaven is, of course, midday. Then the third most powerful angle is the sunset angle. That's called the descendant, opposite the ascendant. So where the sun ascends and where the sun descends, these are the angles. Then the fourth most powerful point is the IMC, Imum Caelum, which is below your feet at midnight. That's where the sun is at midnight, directly below your feet. And that angle is also a dark angle. That, of course, that's where darkness is. It's midnight. It has to do with, remember, the sun's rays now are penetrating rather than quickening. So this house has to do with ancestry, fathers, parents, your home, and all of those concerns. Those four angles tell 50% of what you are and who you are. Then the other eight angles, the other houses, they have diminishing importance, and the order of the importance is this. The succedent houses correspond to the fixed signs. They succeed the angular signs. So that would be the second house immediately following the first house, the fifth house, which follows the fourth house, the eighth house, which follows the seventh, and the 11th, which follows the 10th. Now, the succedent signs have half of the power of the angular signs, exactly half. So they are severely diminished. But of these signs, the most loved are the 11th and the 5th houses. So once you get off the angular houses, 1, 4, 7 and 10, you immediately look for what's in the 11th and the 5th, because good things are found in these houses. Whereas the 2nd and the 8th, Firmicus Maternus says, whichever chart you are doing, you should pray that the native does not have planets in the 2nd or the 8th house. Or, let me attend to my dog. I'll fix her. And you want to pray that the native does not have planets in the 6th or the 12th house. Because the 2nd and the 8th, which are succedent signs, are harmful signs, and so are the 6th and the 12th houses, which are cadent signs. So let's go to the cadent signs, shall we? The cadent correspond to the mutable signs, and they are the weakest. They have to do with hidden things and the past. Whereas the succedent signs have to do with the future, and the angular signs have to do with now. This is why the angular signs are so important, because they have to do with now and what's happening now. Whereas the succedent signs, 2, 5, 8, and 11, these have to do with the future. But going back to your question, the angles, the most powerful sign would be the first, and the least powerful would be the 12th. But not in that order. This is the order. For people who want to write down the order, this is the order of the power of the sign. The first house, the ascendant, is number one. The 10th house, the MC, is number two. The descendant, the seventh house, is number three. The fourth house, which is the fourth most powerful sign, is the IMC. Then the fifth is the 11th house. The sixth is the fifth house. The seventh is the third house. And then you stop there, really. Those seven are the positive ones, and the next five border on and go toward negative. And so the eighth most powerful, least powerful sign is the ninth, then the second, then the eighth, then the sixth, and lastly the 12th. And that is the order.
All right. Thank you for explaining that. One thing I was curious about, too, can you explain how the rings of Saturn are related to the rings people exchange during a wedding ceremony?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, Saturn, the keeper of time, obviously you're going to have a ring on your ring finger in honor of Saturn, because he marries couples. Saturn is the officiator there. So And we also wear ears, rings on the ears. The ears, and in particular the right ear, is the domain of Saturn. Saturn rules, Capricorn rules the hearing, and Saturn rules the ears and the hearing. Because when the sun's down in Capricorn, there's not much to see. It's dark, it's wet, it's midnight, it's winter. In the daily cycle, it represents midnight, from 1 to 2. In the yearly cycle, it represents the heart of winter, from all of December and January, mostly. So your hearing is going to be more prominent than your seeing. Seeing happens during the day. And the sun rules the seeing, according to Plato. The sun rules the right eye and in males, and the moon rules the left eye in males, opposite in females. So we see that the great luminaries have to do with seeing, whereas Saturn, the cold, the wintry, the dark, has to do with another kind of seeing, and that is hearing. When you listen, you are obeying Saturn. This is why they put rings on slaves, so that they would listen, and so that, you know, besides the other beneficial, you know, physically beneficial aspects of putting rings in that in your earlobe, because of the beautiful pressure points and the nerve endings that are there, which relax the rest of the body, it's very therapeutic. But one symbolic reason for earrings is to pay attention to the law of Saturn, because Saturn's law is the highest law. There is no law above Saturn. Saturn is the lawgiver, you know, par excellence. Jupiter also is, and Venus, but Saturn trumps them all.
So when people are exchanging rings under Saturn, hence Satan, through the church, they're really giving their rings in the vows of Satan.
Well, that's who you always make a pact with, the devil, don't you?
Yeah. Well, that leads us to the next question too. You know, do you believe that the God in the Bible is an all-loving God, or is he a bipolar psychopath?
Well, it depends if we're talking about God is light, or we're talking about the Lord Jehovah. See, when the Bible says God is love, God is light, that is unconditional light, consciousness, and love. That's talking about the Creator, the prime source creator. But when it talks about the Lord Jehovah, and he's jealous in his fury, and he shall destroy the wicked in his day of vengeance, that's talking about the demiurge. And he is both loving, very, very loving, but also very, very destructive. And he is Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Venus, Mercury, the moon, and the sun, the seven. That's who Jehovah the Lord is. So when churchgoers are praying to the Lord, they really have no idea that they are actually praying to the demiurge, which is both good and evil. And he tells you in Isaiah, where he says, I give you good, I give you evil. I give you the truth, I give you the lie. That's their job.
We have a person in the chat room. And by the way, people, feel free to call in. The number is 646-716-8890. I see we already have one caller waiting. And Nicholas in the chat room wanted to ask you a question. He wants to know if there's any symbolism related to the Lyrids meteor shower on April 22nd.
Yeah. I'm glad he reminded me of that, because I haven't thought of that about that for a long time. I wouldn't be able to offer any sensible information right now unless I really look at the 22nd of April in terms of astrologically. Then I might be able to offer something. And I might do that if I get a chance while we're talking. How's that?
Oh, that's great. Heidi, there's a caller in the chat room. Would you like to bring that caller in? Well,
I was on mute there. Sure. 408.
Hello.
408, are you there? Hi,
yeah.
What's your name?
My name's Steve. I'm calling you from San Jose, California. And a
hi,
question
Steve.
For hi there. I had a question for Santos. I just was listening to the OPPT show here, and I know he's familiar with that. I'd like his take on the first 2 weeks in July. We have a In the heavens, we have a situation where, as you know, Saturn is going to station and then move forward. At the same time, Neptune is drifting back. And then we have Jupiter coming into Cancer, and for a few days they form a grand trine in water. And the OPPT people are asking, when will the value be released? And would this be, considering the planets, the houses, well, not the houses, but the fact that it's water, would this be an emotional turning point or trigger for, you know, the value contained, of course, in the Saturn in Scorpio, which is, of course, shared value? And so could you comment on that? Have you looked at that?
I'm looking at it right now because I've done this. I've done July the 1st. I can see the kite and the grand trine in water. Jupiter loves Cancer. He exalts in Cancer. And Cancer is all about June, the month June. And Juno is the reason for the month. It's about Juno, the consort of Cancer. So no wonder Jupiter exalts in Cancer. And we've got Saturn in Scorpio. Not a bad placement for Saturn. Not his best. Neptune in Pisces is perfect. Again, we have the ruler of Pisces. So we've got very appropriate planets for the water signs. This grand trine will be, you know, will have to do with emotional and psychic things on the planet. These watery planets, signs, have to do with the water element and the emotions. So you can expect, I would suggest, an uplift of, you know, emotional, beautiful emotional feelings on the planet. A grand trine is a harmonious, it's the opposite of what I spoke about before, the grand cross. If you've got a grand trine, you have lots and lots of harmonious energy in your chart. It doesn't necessarily pan out to pure good. It can be too much good, you know, in the sense of laziness. I've found that a lot of people with grand trines, you know, tend to, you know, just float around and just wait for things to happen to them because great harmonious energy is all around them. And so they don't sort of be as motivated as, say, someone with a T-square in their sign or something like that. So harmonious, watery, emotional energy from great placements of planets. I look, at the time in July, the head of the dragon will be in Scorpio with Saturn. So that the Rahu, the head of the dragon in Scorpio, trining with Jupiter in the sign of his exaltation in June, late June, trining with Neptune in Pisces, the ruler of that sign, this is going to be a magnificent, magnificent time in our history. I believe.
Think this could be the event? They talk about a cosmic and universal event. Could this be more of the Neptune permeating, you know, an emotional outpouring?
Neptune is very inspirational on his good side. It's pure inspiration. Some Bible astrologers call Neptune the Holy Spirit, the Holy Dove. You'll notice that it looks like a stylized menorah, the Jewish candelabra. It is a holy sign. In Pisces, he thrives in Pisces. I think water is one of the special elements. It's the closest to magnetism that you'll get. The fire is electricity. Air is kinetic energy, Earth is kinetic energy, and air is chemical energy of the universe, whereas water is magnetic. So magnetism, it's a magnetic universe, which produces the electric universe that we see, but it is a magnetic universe and an electric dual-verse. So a grand trine in water is probably the best trine you can get, in my opinion, when it comes to spirituality and psychic things.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. magnetism. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking it's good. I'm thinking that it's going to be a really, really good thing.
I think so, yeah. And so yep. people may be able to come together on a more emotional level. And since you got Jupiter, Saturn, you know, that's the belief system and the structure. And then the Neptune, there may be a big shift for a lot of people, you know, that have prominent planets at that, what, about 5 degrees, I believe, you know, 4 to 6 degrees. So that should be monumental for those people.
Yeah, yeah. Look, these are not just any planets. Jupiter is perfect there in Cancer, Neptune in Pisces, Saturn not so. It's the house of Mars. So it's a couple of malefics there. But you've got to remember, water has to do with humanity too. In the Bible, it talks about the waters, the sea. This is why the Vatican own the Holy See, the biggest corporation on the planet, because the Holy See, the sea is dealing with humanity. So if we've got three big planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and Neptune, these guys, they are big. And very powerful. Lots of angular momentum there. And they are in the signs of water, which represent humanity. I believe that this is humanity holding hands together and saying, hey, you know, we always were, you know, we always were here for each other. Let's hold hands. We have the power. The 1%, if they're still around, dominating the planet, the 1% have the control, but we have the power. And I think this is a good opportunity for us under a grand trine to show our solidarity and fraternity and unite once and for all. This is the only thing that the elites fear. There's only one thing that they fear, and that is for the sheeple to wake up and do this. And we will.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. That was my feeling. I just want to get your take on it. And I've got Mars-Uranus conjunction at like 3 degrees of Cancer. And my sun gets, when Saturn stations, it squares my sun directly. So I'm going to have a heck of a good time. All righty.
Wow.
Well, I appreciate you kind of filling in what I felt.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Steve. Santos, last week we had Jordan Maxwell on in 5D Radio and asked him the same question I'd like to ask you. In your opinion, who or what is the Antichrist?
Oh, the Antichrist, there's quite a few answers to that because there's many levels of the Antichrist in operation. But if you look at, supposedly all the presidents in the U.S. are supposed to be Christian, right? It would be very audacious of a president to say, hey, guess what, I'm an Islamist, I'm Islamic, a Muslim, because you'll have some trouble with that. Now, so are they real Christians? No, they're not. You can rest assured that they're Christianity is all about satanic child sacrifices and very, very dark Masonic practices, including, you know, we know what the Bohemian Grovers do, we know what Skull and Boners do, the Bilderbergers, and all of these elite people. They are like lambs in public, and they speak, you know, such pontificating magnanimous words like we are about change and yes we can and God is with us and all of this. That's the Antichrist, because these people put themselves, they nudge the true Christ, which is consciousness and awakening, out of the way, and they wage a war of terrorism against that consciousness. They are against the awakening, so they are the Antichrist and the bar. Just look at the Vatican, the bar, the monarchies. These are the Antichrist on earth. They are pure Antichrist. They do not want a consciousness awakening and mankind coming together as a brotherhood and living in our communities without anyone telling us what to do. They could never stand that. You know, they will never be able to have their cocktail parties if that happens. So that is the Antichrist. But the Antichrist is also people who deny their own divinity. We can be Antichrists ourselves if we deny that we are God. It's very frustrating and sad to see. I mean, it's understandable that churchgoers will say, "Oh, you're not God. How dare you say that?" But when you get so-called enlightened people, and I get so-called truthers attack me for saying that we are God. I had one the other day, a doctor, believe it or not, Dr. So-and-so, who I've known for about a year and a half. She says, "A student of mine tells me that you said on one of your radio shows, Santos, that you are God." First of all, if you've got students, you're an idiot and you think you're a guru, which you're not. Okay? Call no one father on this earth, for one is your father who is in the heavens. Call no one teacher who is on this earth, for one is your teacher who is in the heavens. And that teacher is your unconditioned consciousness that you are connected to. So, for a start, you fail Dr. So-and-so by accusing me and having students. Oh, how creepy. Ooh. I mean, all these creeps that go around, you know, charging $600 to come and hear me channel Zerubbabel from the Pleiadians, you know. Please, give me a break. You know, no one's a guru. Rather than giving people fish, teach them how to fish. Now, and that's what astrology does. You see, this is why they never talk about astrology. They don't share the science of astrology. They share, "Oh, I'm special. I've channeled some information that you can't possibly do. You have to come to me and pay $600, you idiots." So Dr. So-and-so is an idiot for a start. Sorry, am I cutting off?
No, we're here. We're okay.
You know what? I might have to go to my show, guys. American Freedom Radio are calling me. I might have the times wrong. So.
Okay. Well.
Yeah. It's 2 hours earlier than you were right, Greg.
Well, we'll have to get you back on because there was a bunch of callers and we still had a bunch of questions. So if we can get you back on, that'd be great. And if you'd like to, if you want to tell everybody how to get in touch with you, especially for your chart readings, that'd be great too.
Yeah, I'm going to be busy though for chart readings, but because I'm preparing to go to Ecuador. But universaltruthschool.com. There you go.
Okay. Well, Santos, thank you so very much. We would love to have you back on. And like I said, I know there's a lot of callers that didn't get the chance to get their questions answered, and I apologize for that. I'm sorry, folks. But if you would come on again, that would be wonderful. And at least we have a better idea of what our time frame is right now, too.
Exactly. Thanks, Greg. Okay. Thanks, Heidi. Thanks, listeners.
Thanks, Santos.
Thanks so much, bye-bye. Santos. All right, bye-bye now.
Bye.
Yep, and I'm sorry, folks. Sorry about that, folks. We had a little misunderstanding about the time schedule, and we're just appreciative of whatever time we did have Santos here. So we did get one caller in, and apologize for anybody else that wasn't able to get through, and we will definitely have him back again. So well, we're looking at just 2 minutes left anyway, so thank you everybody for coming in and being part of this amazing program, our chat with Santos, and looking definitely forward to having him back next week. Well, Heidi, why don't you tell people about our guest coming up?
Sorry, Blog Talk is talking to me. We have next week we have an astrologer, Kelly Rosaro, on, who's actually about to head to Italy to do a really interesting conference. And she's just a bundle of positive energy. So get your astrological questions lined up for her. And then the following week, We have Els Bastin, who is an animal who is just the most divine energy, one of the most divine energies I've ever encountered. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And again, if you have pets or a fondness for animals, this is a show that you'll thoroughly enjoy. She has some skills that I'm sure all of us have to some degree, one degree or another, but she's devoted her life to it. So that's going to be a very, very cool show.
And we were just talking about possibly getting Stephen Greer on. We're going to see if we can contact him and see if he'd like to be part of the show. Also, Graham Hancock, I spoke with his son, and he said that it looks great that we should be able to get Graham Hancock on as well. So we got some pretty big names coming up, and it's really exciting. So, you know, looking forward to all these great guests that we're having.
I'm really excited. Yeah, I think the Stephen Greer, I think that would be a really well-timed one because of his film coming out in a week, I think. Yeah, so it's the 22nd, I think. So that would be brilliant.
There is a person, 786 is right there. They're still hanging on. They've been hanging on for a while. I don't know if they just wanted to say hi or have a comment, but 786, you're live on N5D Radio. Are you there?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Welcome to N5D Radio. What's your name?
Oh, my gosh. My name is Lee.
What's your name?
My name is Lee.
Leland.
Lee, just Lee.
Lee. Okay, hi, Lee.
Yeah. Hey, Greg, Heidi. It's so nice to talk to you guys. I mean, I've seen the website. I've been on your website for the last year. I've been paying attention. And it's just so much information. I love the news. It's so informative. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for being
really wanted to say thank you.
No, thank you for being part of the N5D family. I know people can, there's a search box in the upper right-hand corner of every web page, and people can just start searching, and they get lost, and people will be on that website for literally 5-6 hours at a time. And if they're not doing that, they're chatting for like another 3 or 4 hours because there's a live chat at the bottom of every web page.
It's a beautiful thing, I swear.
Uh-huh.
And
thank you.
I believe you stay in Sarasota, correct? That's not too far from where I am, which is somewhere in Miami. But still.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll get a chance to hang out one day.
Well, you know, I was thinking about having an N5D kind of like get together, and I'll post I'll post it on N5D. And it'd be cool if people could make arrangements and come on down to Sarasota and meet at Siesta Key Beach. Like I said, the sand there is 99% quartz crystal. It's amazing. It really is.
Oh,
I would still be there.
That's
that
beautiful.
Sounds awesome.
spirit.
Oh, yeah, especially if we did it, like, during the summer where it's, off-season, and it'd be cheaper for hotels for everybody, and it'd be a blast. And they have a drum circle on Sunday nights here, too, which is amazing, too. So if people could actually make it through the whole weekend and enjoy the drum circle on Sunday night, that'd be even amazing.
Wow, an N5D drum circle. That would change some energy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, like I said, it's a beautiful thing. Whatever you got going on, it's really beautiful. N5D, Greg, Heidi, you guys actually had Santos Bonacci. I've been watching his videos. I really did have a question, but I was busy, and I wasn't able to pick up the line till recently. So really a really nice blessing that you guys have.
Well, yeah, he's going to be back on too. So we're really blessed to have the people that are coming on, and I'm really happy with our role in this awakening process.
Yeah.
Grateful, humble.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the word.
Yes, that's the word, right? That's the word.
Yeah.
Very humble.
Yeah. And grateful. Yeah, both.
Most definitely. So. But thank you so much for inviting me, even though it's just for a few moments.
Indeed. No, thank you for calling, Lee, and feel free to call in anytime.
Good to talk to you, Lee. Yeah, I look forward to talking to you again in the next episode.
For sure.
All right, my friend. All right, well, you have
a great
evening.
Night.
You too. Thank you for calling. Take care now. So
okay,
that's our show for you, folks. Anything you'd like to say? Anything you'd like to say in closing?
Oh, no, just I had a blast. I learned so much every time we do these shows. So I'm now going to go digest it all, I think, and maybe listen again. That's a lot. Good.
Oh, I'm in the same boat. Yeah, when he was talking about the most important aspects and things to look for on your chart, he said, you know, write this down. And I had so many things, like I was paying attention to the chat room as well, and everybody's multitasking, and we're all absorbing this. So I'm going to have to go back through and take some notes on this.
So he's an intense professor, that's for sure, an intense professor.
Uh-huh.
And he knows all of it. His brain is so fast. What distilled water will do for a soul. He's an example of it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So just as a reminder, next week we have on Kelly Rosano, astrologer, and she has this amazing energy, and you guys are going to love her. Definitely come on back next week. For those people who have missed the show, I post all of the shows on my N5D YouTube channel. So just go to N5D on YouTube, and you'll find it there. And I'll also post it on N5D.com the following day. So, you know, in case you miss it, you're going to catch it one way or the other. So we're going to close out with a song written and performed by my co-host, Heidi. And as I mentioned, next week will be Kelly Rosano. So tune in for that. And just want to say thank you once again to everybody that tuned in and listened. And namaste to everyone.
Namaste, guys.
Don't stop, think twice.